I don't like Wendy.
Oh, thank you. Wait, I clapped over it. Can we hear it again?
I don't like Wendy.
I would welcome...
I don't like Wendy.
Was it Mike?
Yeah, Mike doesn't like you.
I don't like Wendy.
I would see, but you know me. I want to know why.
Well,
he hung up so abruptly after saying that.
He called me back after the show.
How long were you on the phone?
25 minutes.
Yeah, I thought so.
I said, Mike, first of all, how can you not like Wendy? And then he explained how he could not like you.
I don't like Wendy.
At the 25-minute mark, I said, Mike, you won me over. I don't like Wendy either. So we left it there. For those of you who are confused by what you heard and said to yourself, that's impossible, that heretic yelling that he doesn't like Wendy. Yesterday, we had a very frank discussion about libraries here in Chicago and in other cities and how it is now possible for you to go in and just view pornography on the computers at the libraries. And Mike called and made some points. And then I think we have that whole clip of what happened. Listen, this is from yesterday's show. What about Wendy's idea of a separate room, a perv room there in the library? What
with
do you
a
think?
Curtain, of course.
I don't like Wendy.
Oh.
So thank you, guys.
All right.
Well, Mike, don't hang
You're
up.
Welcome.
Your baby? You know me. I will walk to the ends of the world to make someone... I just want to know
true.
Why, because I want to win them over.
I guess that's important. Yeah, I can understand where that's important, but you have to know... We've got dozens of people listening, Wendy. So some people are going to like
you,
and some are not going to like you. Mike, obviously not one who likes you.
I don't like Wendy.
I'm a little bit like Donald Trump. I want to make sure everybody likes, although I don't even know that he cares. He just wants numbers.
Oh, I think he does care. I mean,
no, I know.
I'm trying to figure out at what point in Mike's day he decided, like,
been ongoing.
No, but at some point he went, I'm going to call the show. And I don't like Wendy, and maybe I'll mention it. Like, did he think that out in advance, or did he?
I think he doesn't like me, and he, you know, when you singled me out, that gave him the perfect opportunity. I think he used to listen to you overnight, and he hates
maybe.
That I'm with you because he thinks I'm dragging you down.
No,
is he related to you?
Maybe Cousin Mike? No, no, I've never met him before in my life.
Thanks for starting the show like that. Do you want me to read all the texts of people that don't like you?
I know.
It won't take 25 minutes.
Oh, stop
no,
now.
I'm just saying.
You get some too.
I quit.
But you don't care as much as I do. I care. I want to know why. If it's something that he just doesn't prefer my way of thinking, that's fine. But if it's like, you know, maybe it could be constructive criticism.
Yeah. That's
I'd like
a
to know why. Why don't you
it?
Like me?
That was the best part is he mentioned that he was not a fan and then he was done, but you just wanted to, you know,
I wanted to
you
win
wanted
him
to
over.
Know why, right. And that could have happened.
I will. I'll win him over.
Well, he might be listening again today, right?
Well,
he
see, that's be. What I don't understand either. Maybe he is listening for you and he listens to the podcast and that edits me out of it.
Maybe he's had his stereo speakers fixed so that when you and I talk, only my voice happens.
I feel sorry for you, Mike, if that's the case.
Could you disconnect this stereo speakers from dear Wendy?
It doesn't work. You
Why?
Don't just come through on the right side
I don't
and I
like
come
Wendy.
Through on the left.
I know. It's AM radio. We're not even stereo friendly, are we?
No.
AM stereo. It's coming up again.
It is? All right. Well, then that's a reality. Maybe he covers one ear whenever we're having a conversation.
I think he listens and just flips off the radio when
I'm
talking.
That's possible.
A double flip.
You're not talking the switch, right? No.
No.
That's possible.
I know you can't please everyone, but I sure try.
I know, and that's all you can do. It would be ridiculous to think that anybody, not you, not me, not Steve, not anybody, no matter what you're doing, 100% of the people will not like you. That's absurd. Nobody.
Jessica's texting in, I used to not like Wendy, but now I do like her. See, I won Jessica
right.
over. You know, to know me is to hate me.
That's an interesting way
we
of
got
looking
another
at
t-shirt
it.
Coming?
Yeah, that I think that warrants a t-shirt. I think that would make for a pretty good t-shirt. Yeah.
People would like me more if I stopped talking. Well, then I wouldn't have a job.
Try that for a month. See what happens.
Hey, I won't be here next Wednesday because I have jury duty and I'm very excited about
Kevin,
it.
Kevin, can you call Mike and tell him that next Wednesday is going to be a great show?
I don't like Wendy.
He does not like you.
Listen
It'll be
next
a safe zone. for Mike.
What are you going to do?
The rest of us will miss you.
No, I don't believe that either.
That's true.
Nice try, Steve.
I mean, that'll be good.
I think Steve called as Mike.
I don't think that. Oh, maybe. Steve, did
Can
you?
I hear it again? Just
I don't like Wendy.
No, it's no, not Steve's not. Register.
That's
no.
his fake voice.
No, even I know his fake voice.
It was my mom.
Mrs. Bertrand is not like you.
God, I love her voice.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break. We've got a lot to discuss with you. It's Bill and Wendy.
I don't like Wendy.
On WGN. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. Mike, if you're listening, I hope you give Wendy a second chance. She's going to do all she can to win you over, and you guys can be friends.
Why do you start the day like this?
I thought about this so much yesterday because I just thought about that split second where he's having a conversation with us and then he just decides, I'm just going to throw in the fact that I'm not a fan of yours.
Singled me out. Had you not said, do you agree with Wendy's idea, then
right?
I don't know that that would have come out. You gave him the opportunity. It was Pippen to Jordan right there.
But I didn't know he was going to come back with the fact that he didn't like you, although I guess he told Kevin right at the a lot of the listeners will call up and say,
I actually told him to say it.
Oh, you did tell him to say it. Good.
Ryan, what are you laughing about?
Oh, I didn't know you could hear me. Well,
Wendy can always hear you, Ryan. It's the
That's
weirdest
That's why people
thing.
Don't like me.
It's one of the things Mike really doesn't like about her.
Well, I don't know. I switched over to your radio station a while back because this other station, whose name shall not be mentioned, put some losers on who used to be popular back in the 70s or 80s.
Oh.
And I heard your guys' show, and I really thought it was, you know, pretty funny and pretty good. And I don't know what it was, though, at first. Wendy just kind of got on my nerves. I really don't know why, but you know what? You've really grown on me, and I can't see having my morning without the both of you.
Oh, isn't that a nice ending?
That's pretty sweet, Ryan.
That's excellent.
Why did I bug you?
I don't know. I don't know. I was like, who is this snarky person over here who's just, I don't know.
Now, see, here's the thing, Wendy. You've got to leave good enough alone. He's with you now. You don't
right.
want to ask about
yeah,
the past.
But maybe you could use this. You could use Ryan's story for guys like Mike and so many others that are afraid to call and say they don't like you.
What, are we out of show content today? Well, I mean, really?
No, there's plenty.
I didn't want to talk about this. I got a whole agenda, Bill. Thanks. See, is that the snark you've come to love?
Yes, yes.
Yes.
Well, I have to get back to driving, so you guys have a great show.
Wait, Ryan, before you hang up, we have T-shirts okay. with Wendy's face emblazoned on them. Can we give you one of these T-shirts? Payback is a Wendy T-shirt. They're highly coveted.
Wow, wow. The other guy might want one. Maybe.
See,
he doesn't want one.
You know, leave it. Ryan, have a great day. Drive safely. Buckle up, all right?
You know I love you.
All right, well, hang on. If you want it, take it. If not, I don't care anymore.
Is this actually a real T-shirt?
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought you were pulling my leg.
No.
Okay, well, I will take a Wendy T-shirt, and I will proudly sport it and
Excellent.
Take some pictures and put it on public media, whatever, you know, social media.
Whatever
there you
the
go.
Kids That's do. Me. All right, hold on. Kevin will get your information.
Thank you, Ryan. See what you, I mean, this is just a waste of everybody's time.
But Ryan's story is one.
Ryan's story.
Ryan's story. It's a sequel to Love Story. His story is one. I mean, think about it. Sometimes you'll meet somebody and you won't hit it off with them right away. But over time, you go, wow, I wasn't seeing that person for what they really are. And it just proves it can happen.
That's so funny, says a texter. I was the same. At first, I didn't care for Wendy either. Now I love her.
See?
To know me is to hate me.
Yeah.
Same thing, says 847. I thought, wow, I don't know that I can read this on the air.
It's that bad?
I just lost it. Oh. So many texts are coming in.
Oh.
I thought, snarky bitch. And then I realized I'm one too, and I was just projecting my own feelings of myself.
Isn't that interesting?
Her.
How about that?
I want what's best for everyone. I really do. I spend most of my life trying to please everybody else but myself,
yes.
which is a stupid thing to do.
Yes.
And I really don't like when people don't like me. John, you have that same issue, don't you?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I was in education 33 years, and as a high school disciplinarian, I was very concerned, and I realized it on the back end sometimes, about how the students felt about me after I was suspending or even expelling them.
Mm.
But I loved working with them. But like Wendy, when you care about people, you don't want any negative energy. And that's kind of, I left the field after 33 years still feeling that way, and now I'm in another field of security with the government. And it's really great when you do care enough about that, but it also can be a flaw that kind of gnaws away at you, wondering why. Like, why don't they like me? You know, even though you're doing what you have to do. And in Wendy's case, it's just an opinion or a thought.
Right.
And by the way, I need a Wendy shirt.
Oh, can we, sure. Do you want one? We can get you one.
Oh, my God. After Ryan, yes, 100%.
All right.
Do you know what you're walking into, though? I mean, this is a shirt that says payback is a Wendy.
Oh, trust me. Well, let's put it this way. I've been the one who would sit in the pond or sit in the pool and splash. I don't wade too quietly.
Good. We need more people like you.
Splash.
All right, John, hold on. Kevin will get your information.
You rock, Wendy. Don't change.
Thank you, John.
And he didn't mean your clothes. You got to change your clothes. Remember the Will? I think it was Will Rogers who said, "I never met a man I didn't like." Impossible. Could you go your whole life and never meet a guy you don't like? I mean, good for Will Rogers if it was true. I just don't think it's possible.
I shoot for a morning.
Look at the king of snark right there.
All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then there's a lot more show coming your way next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Still saddened thinking about Mary Tyler Moore passing.
Yeah.
I was thinking about it all last night. All these wonderful tributes are coming across from her friends, her coworkers, her peers.
Wouldn't you put Mary Tyler Moore in that category where you say, you know, at some point we're not going to have her anymore, but on that day yesterday when it happened, it just kept hitting you over and over. A dozen times yesterday I just thought about it. Sometimes I would turn on the internet and there would be a picture of her with her the day she was born and yesterday's date, and I go, oh, come on, and then I turn on the TV and there it was. It's hard to imagine.
She was so funny. She was so pretty.
And let's give a point or two. We touched on this yesterday to influential, because as talented as she was, as beautiful as she was extremely influential. One of the things I want to talk about is Michelle Obama, who talked about her a couple of months ago prior to her death and was talking about the importance of Mary Tyler Moore. Let me just read you just a little bit of these of the text from this. In the interview, Michelle Obama says she, Mary Tyler Moore, was one of the few single working women depicted on television at the time. She wasn't married. She wasn't looking to get married. And at no point did the series end in a happy ending with her finding a husband. A lot of times TV would do that. That would be the goal of the show, is you can't just have a woman living on her own without a husband or kids. Let's fix this. They didn't do that with Mary Tyler Moore.
She was a trendsetter, and we mentioned that yesterday. My cousin Susie was inspired by her letter M on the wall, mm-hmm. and had an S, and then you had letters that your aunt made for. I mean, a lot of women really identified, like, here's a strong woman who can do it on her own. She can make it after all.
Right, right. There's really so much. I mentioned this yesterday, too. Anybody who goes into the profession of acting, especially if you're in TV, your hope is to have a hit show. And she had two gigantic hit shows, two of the most, I think, important and iconic sitcoms of all time, with the Dick Van Dyke Show and the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And, yeah, she did other things. We mentioned yesterday, if you haven't seen her in Ordinary People, you can't believe the range she shows from playing Laura Petrie and Mary Richards. And then it's the same woman in Ordinary People. It's
She's such a monster in
incredible.
That movie, isn't
yeah.
she?
Yeah.
And done so effectively. She was a type 1 diabetic, and that has to be mentioned. My dad was a type 1 diabetic, made it till 46 years old. That's it. She made it to 80. That's pretty great.
I think it is.
And, you know, a lot of times diabetics lose some limbs. They lose their eyesight.
Yeah.
And there were reports that, you know, she was losing her eyesight towards the end. And 80 years old, I mean, that's okay, you know? I wish we had her longer, but
she
hasn't been in great health for the last several years.
So I often say this, but she's a perfect example. Wouldn't you love to know what she looked like in her last week or just most recently?
I'm almost afraid
to.
No, I don't mean it in a bad thing. I mean, but you know, we didn't see her at this age.
You're right.
We haven't seen her for at least 4 years. She's been out of the public eye for at least 4 years. She took ill a little over four years ago. What would the benefit in that be, Steve? I'm curious.
Well, the wider benefit for all of us is to, you know, we tend to lock people up and pretend that they don't get older. And,
right.
And that's just, it's not a healthy thing, I think, for all of us. We are going to get old and look different. And,
yeah.
And so I would like an accurate picture of, you know, when we think of her dying, we're all thinking of a different Mary Tyler Moore.
But that's okay,
which is
too.
Okay. It is okay, too. But
yeah.
I just think there's grace in growing old, and I'd like to see that, too.
I was thinking yesterday how some people close to her have died recently. Grant Tinker, who was her husband and ran a network for years and years, just died about a month ago. Anne Morgan Gilbert, who played her best friend Millie Helper, just died a few months ago. It's sad. The Dick Van Dyke Show is still a show that if I'm switching channels and it's on, I cannot turn it off. I watch it every time I happen upon it. And it's hard to fathom that nearly everybody from that cast is gone at this point. Dick Van Dyke is still alive, and Rosemarie is still alive, but everybody
else. That one
else,
surprises me. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
She seemed so much older than everybody else
yeah.
that I'm surprised she's one of the last women standing.
You know what's funny is you say that, and when I watch the show now, I realize that the characters that were the older characters on the show, and that's everybody from Mel Cooley to Sally Rogers to even Alan Brady, you and I are older than they were at that time, but that'll never make sense to me.
But they made him look older. I mean, how old was Archie Bunker when he was Archie Bunker?
He was 47.
See what I mean?
Carol O'Connor was 47 when he started playing Archie Bunker.
But Mary Richards was 30 when the Mary Tyler Moore started, and she looks older than what we think of 30 now.
I think so.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Yesterday we played a little bit of the theme song. Actually, I think we played the whole theme song to the Mary Tyler Moore Show. It was written and performed by a guy named Sonny Curtis, and the name probably doesn't mean much to anybody because that's really the song. If you know of Sonny Curtis's music, that's the song that was the breakout song. But I found out yesterday a little bit about him and his history because he was quoted talking about the importance of Mary Tyler Moore in his life. Do you know what band he was with? And actually, for people who don't know, I guess everyone knows the theme song. But, Kevin, do you have a little bit of the Mary Tyler Moore theme that we can play?
The Sonny Curtis version.
Yeah.
That name is ringing a bell, and I am not Googling it because I like to make my brain work.
You'll be
once
shocked
in a while
to learn what band he was a part of.
Who can turn the world on?
This is him in concert.
All right, so that's Sonny Curtis.
No, but you're not that far off. He was a band member in Buddy Holly's band, The Crickets. For years and years and years. And when they were first in the planning stages of the Mary Tyler Moore Show, he had the same agent as Mary Tyler Moore. And the agent said, hey, they're putting together a show for Mary. Can you just write down, here's the situation. Single woman moves to a new city, starts a new job. Go. And in 2 hours, he wrote that song.
That is one of the greatest theme songs.
It is, isn't
Seriously.
It? Seriously. It is. Now you
did he play guitar with Buddy Holly?
He did.
He did. If you hear his guitar, you can hear that.
Yeah, there's a lot of Buddy Holly influence. Right, absolutely. You noticed this yesterday. I don't even know if you noticed it. We played the theme song from the show, and you said that sounded different to me.
Yeah.
They had a theme song in the first season of the show that then they changed. They wanted the lyrics just a little bit different. In season one of her theme song, the first line is, how will you make it on your own? But then after a year of the show, they realized the producers, she is going to make it on her own. She's doing fine. She's got a job. She's got friends. So then they changed it to who can turn the world on with her smile.
Oh, I just got goosebumps when you said that.
Yeah.
It's really sweet. Nick wants to talk about Mary Tyler Moore. Hi, Nick.
How horrified would Mary Richards be at The Bachelorette or The Bachelor.
Horribly.
These clips that they're showing, her arguing with Lou about $50 more. Why are you asking me these questions? They're too personal, Mr. Grant. All these strong images, it just gives me chills to think about how good those things were.
Yeah.
And how important they were at the time. I mean, we're waxing, she was just talented and wonderful, but she just hit a chord with so many people, and God, she'll be missed. And for a guy, I'm 58. I'll be 58 in a couple of days. And
happy birthday.
Thank you. And happy Blizzard Day, by the way.
Thank you.
Yes, 50 years ago today. Yeah.
So, but just to see her with Rob, and as a kid, you look at it and say, oh, is that what my life's going to be like at someday? It never was, but she struck so many chords with so many people, and God bless her.
Well said.
Thank you, Nick.
Thanks so much. You know what? Here's what happened at the exact same time. I think for a lot of younger girls watching the Mary Tyler Moore Show, they realized, I can do exactly that. I can go out and get a very fruitful career. Don't need a guy if there's a guy as a part of it. But I also think it said to guys, myself included, that women are a driving force. She was producing the news at a major television station, and subliminally it said to guys, why couldn't a woman do that? Absolutely.
She really did pave the way for the working woman. I have to mention, though, that there were times she cried at work, and that's something that you're not really supposed to do.
That happened to one.
But that's what I loved about her, too, is she was real.
Yeah.
I know it was a character.
Yeah.
But Mr. Grant, it showed, she's still a woman, but she can do it on her own.
It's so funny you pulled those words out, Mr. Grant, because in my head as a kid, that was the bridge between her two characters. Laura Petrie was, oh, Rob.
Right.
And then Mary Richards was, Mr. Grant. But
that on purpose, don't you think?
I don't know. I can't figure that out. But for me, that was the bridge that led from one character to the other, was that exact little phraseology.
Pretty amazing woman. And she loved her animals. She did a lot of work for animals.
Yeah. Yeah.
So really a wonderful woman, talented, beautiful, and honestly so funny. You had mentioned yesterday about her timing, and if you weren't listening, it was the episode with the...
There's a package delivered to the Petrie's house that she's not supposed to open because
right.
Earlier in the episode, they kind of... they hint at her snooping abilities, and she's not going to do that anymore. And then she opens this package, and a giant raft
inflates,
right?
And takes over the whole room.
Yeah. And Carl Reiner talked about how until that episode, they liked her and they knew she was great, but they didn't know how great until they saw her in that episode. And then from then on, the writers went out of their way to give her more to do on the show.
She was really fantastic. She will be missed. Mary Tyler Moore, 80 years old.
Yeah. All right. A little break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right. We're remembering Mary Tyler Moore. Bill and Wendy show, 720 WGN. And Jeremy called in and wants to talk. Hi, Jeremy.
Hello.
This is Jeremy. Hi, Jeremy. Jeremy spoke.
Yeah. I just wanted to make a point that she made people laugh with good, clean comedy, not like the trash we're thrown at now.
Yeah, it really proves that it can be done. I mean, so many other people have done it too, but Mary Tyler Moore, I don't remember. We played a clip yesterday of a joke she told on David Letterman that I guess is kind of on the borderline of good taste, I guess. But yeah, for the most part, always clean and always funny.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Can I tell you another byproduct that I thought about yesterday? And I think I've mentioned this before. When somebody like Mary Tyler Moore dies and the praise is just unending, I was reading so many tributes to her yesterday from people in the news business. Katie Couric was talking about how she used to watch the show and realize a career in journalism was certainly an option for her as a woman. From people in the comedy world, from actors, you name it, they were praising Mary Tyler Moore. And I always think how sad it is. I'm sure Mary Tyler Moore realized that she was loved and respected. But these tributes always happen when it's too late, when the person isn't around to enjoy them.
Maybe we should do a tribute for you then. Maybe tomorrow.
Let's do that tomorrow. All right. That'd be great.
I do want to mention, too, I'm a big Allman Brothers fan, and Butch Trucks passed away yesterday as well. 69 years old, one of the original drummers of the Allman Brothers Band. And what I loved about seeing that band live is they had two drummers on stage all the time, and it just filled whatever arena you saw them in. And he was a founder of the Allman Brothers Band. Big fan of his, too. So I felt bad.
Here's a note to celebrities. Always try to not die on a day where some other bigger celebrity dies, because you won't get much attention.
Who had that joke in the airplane? You have mentioned this.
Oh, Terry Garr.
Yeah.
Years ago, Terry Garr was on an airplane, and she looked over, and Cher was sitting a couple of rows away. And all Terry Garr said she could think about through the whole flight was, I hope this plane doesn't crash because I won't get mentioned anywhere. Everybody will talk about Cher dying in a plane crash and I won't get any coverage.
Thankfully, the plane did not crash.
Right.
And then you have Michael Jackson and Farrah Fawcett on the same day, two icons.
Yeah.
I mean, really. And they I guess they got equal attention, but it does take away.
Didn't Groucho Marx and Elvis Presley die about a day apart? I think they died about a day apart, because I remember Groucho Marx not getting as much attention as I thought he would have or should have. Elvis Presley kind of dominating, of course, for obvious reasons.
I wonder if the family waits to inform the press. Let's wait a day.
Right.
Because it does seem lately, unlike Mary Tyler Moore, which we knew she was in grave condition, and then when she passed away like a half an hour later. But a lot of times something will come up in the news and you'll notice it over the weekend. And it's like, I can't believe this guy died like earlier this month.
Right. And it's just now getting a mention. Oh, one other thing I forgot to tell you yesterday. We were going through a bunch of Mary Tyler Moore's best known roles. And one name that I forgot to mention yesterday, I don't even know if you'll remember this or if anybody will remember this. But when we were kids growing up on Channel 7, they did a 3:30 movie. And it coincided exactly with when I came home from school. Our school ended at 3:10. I came home. I was home at 3:30.
With a snack in front of the TV?
Always.
Introduced us to Beach Blanket Bingo.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. Beach Blanket Bingo was a constant on there. They also had Planet of the Apes Week, which I looked forward tremendously all year
and
long.
And, you know, the staff announcer there was Mike Rabchak.
I did know that.
Yeah.
Radio's Mike Rabchak was.
Did overnight's old-time radio here for a while.
He was great. Yeah, he was fantastic.
I guess I was out playing because I didn't watch any of these movies.
Well, when Summer of 42 was on, you couldn't get my attention for it. I was watching
that.
Summer of 42. I love Summer of 42. So, Hermie and Oski. So the one Mary Tyler Moore entry into that 3:30 movie is about once a year they played a movie called What's So Bad About Feeling Good with Mary Tyler Moore and George Peppard. And it was a very peculiar movie.
Are you listening to yourself talk sometimes?
Yeah, I don't understand.
Because it's just cute.
I just say stuff. But like
George Peppard.
But it was hard to envision again. That was the same Mary Tyler Moore that I knew from the Mary Tyler Moore Show and from the Dick Van Dyke Show, because her character in that was kind of a hippie type.
What was the gist of that one?
What's So Bad About Feeling Good? Now, I haven't seen it since I was 11 or 12, but it had something to do with them finding a drug that made everybody feel good all the time.
Was it acid?
Probably. I was probably too naive to know what it was. It could have been. I don't know. Did you find it? I don't remember what the exact synopsis was, but I just remember it being...
It's a new infection that simply makes people feel better.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So that's what that whole movie was. And I'd go, well, you can't put Summer of 42 on instead of this? I haven't seen that in a month. I want Summer of 42 on.
A new infection that simply makes people feel happy is treated as a threat by the authorities while its victims work to spread it to others.
Right. But almost everybody in the movie had like a hippie flair to them, because everybody started out afraid of this, and then everybody became like a San Francisco hippie type, and they're like, hey man, we're feeling good all the time. What's wrong with that? That was like every scene in the movie was that.
And this was made, did you say 1968? Yeah, 1968. It had to have been acid.
I guess so, maybe.
And then you forgot Susan St. James, the lovely Susan St. James was in
there. She was in that. I didn't even.
Dom DeLuise, the lovely Dom DeLuise, was in
DeLuise
it.
Dom DeLuise in that? I don't remember him in there.
Susan St. James was something else.
McMillan and wife. She was very attractive.
Very attractive.
I loved her scruffy voice. That's why I started smoking.
You can thank her for that.
Yes.
All right, let's take a break. Steve has the news, and then there's more show. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. I'm sure everybody remembers the Love Connection, right? You remember the Love Connection with Chuck Woolery?
Totally remember that. I watched it. I'm just trying to think. I mean, I guess I watched it. There wasn't a lot on TV, so it was kind of funny, and I like Chuck Woolery. I thought he was great.
Am I imagining this? Whenever I think of the Love Connection, it was on very late at night, right? It wasn't on in primetime hours.
I want to say like 11:30, yeah.
Something like that. All right, so the deal on the Love Connection was this. They would set up a guy or sometimes a girl. They would flip roles a little bit, and they would show them videos of three different prospective dates. And then the contestant would choose. Oh, actually, the audience would choose,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you had an audience member had a little gizmo that they would click to
right.
see who should be paired up.
Right. So then the contestant would go out with whichever of the three the audience chose as the best date for that person. And they would run a little video of the date, and then Chuck would talk to the person, and then they would all decide if there was going to be a second date or not. It was fun. Well, now they're bringing back the show, The Love Connection.
How old were we when that was on? Because it's funny that we watched that.
I think teenagers, right? We must have been teenagers, right?
Yeah, I guess
right?
that's it. 1983 to 1998.
Was it on that long?
Wow, good work, Chuck
Woolery. I didn't know it was on that long, but I guess it was. All right, so now they're bringing back the show, The Love Connection, and we got a press release, and they said the producers want to come on, and they thought it would be fun if you guys, if neither of you are married, one of you could be a contestant, or if you know somebody there at the station who's an eligible bachelor or bachelorette, we would plug them in, and you and I thought of the same person immediately, right?
Yes, but for different reasons.
Yes. And that person, the most eligible bachelor here at WGN, if not the city.
In all the land,
in
Bill.
All the land.
Wow.
Is sitting right there, and it's our own Mark Harmon. Hi, Mark.
Well, thanks, guys, for thinking of me. There's a thank you. I think there's a little bit of an ouch, too. Like, okay, yes, I am that guy. So it's great to be here, and I can't wait to dial into your vision of how I can make my life better. I think I'm very open to your suggestions.
I don't think you are.
See,
I think that's what the problem is.
Okay, tell me what the problem is.
You are a great guy. You're good looking. You're funny. You're talented.
Smell like a bunch of roses, you do.
I do shower.
Yep.
Thank you.
It's funny. You must have gotten closer to him than I did. I didn't notice your smell.
Don't get that close. Don't get
We've
so
played
close.
Tennis, Wendy.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yes, you're an athlete. You are a great guy. And it's like everyone says, oh, yeah, Carmen needs a girlfriend. I don't think you're ready. I don't think you're ready to commit.
Well, I think if I was like a what do they call those things they put in the oven, a turnover, I would be overdone at this point. I think that I am well ready.
You passed your prime?
Yeah. Well, no, hold on a second. Let's not put that out there. I think I'm right there in my prime. Maybe towards the end of my prime, perhaps.
All right.
So,
can you give your age bracket? You don't have to say your exact age, but
unless you want to,
what bracket are you in?
No, I'll give my age. I'm 40. Oh, it's painful. I'm 43.
Yeah,
oh, so you're still a baby.
Tick, 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 tick. My biological clock is moving along here. We don't want to be the 52-year-old first-time dad. I mean, it's now. Now is the time because I do want to have the old. You know, I gotta have my own Serena and Venus. Congratulations, making to the Australian Open final. I know that you wanted to talk a little bit of sports too. Bill.
You better get busy then.
I know.
Although Tony Randall was how old when he had babies?
Well, he is still having children, and he has been dead for 8 years, and he's
right.
still having kids.
Well, I'd like to know my kids a little bit. I don't need to know them when they're 78, but at least until they're
Right.
Somewhere into the...
But look at this. That shows how much you've thought this out. Is you're not just looking at a woman to be a potential mate, but you're thinking, I want a family, and I want all that comes along with that. And that's a good thing, I think.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate that. Yes, I have thought this through.
Yeah.
Probably.
Although, who did you say you wanted your kids to be, Serena and who?
Serena and Venus.
Okay.
Those would be two African-American children. That could be a tad bit of a difficulty.
You never know.
Right, that's true, too.
Mark, you can do anything you set your mind to.
But right there explains it all to me. He's got this vision of what it's supposed to be. I'm going to get married. She's going to be attractive. We're going to have these great kids who are, they play tennis. What if they don't like tennis? What if they deviate from what's in your head? And I think that's what your hang up is.
Okay, not liking tennis is not an option. That won't happen. But outside of that, I hear what you're saying. I mean, I was on a date fairly recently with someone and she stands up. She's made some comment about how she's got like really long arms. And I'm like, well, let me see. And she, puts, and we extend out the arms. I'm like, wow, that's awesome. And she's like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, what do I mean? I want an athlete. You're You got
You said that right to her. I want an athlete.
Yes, yeah. She loved it. I was like, "You're 5'7". You got long arms. Beautiful. Like that's perfect.
How high up on your list is that as a necessity?
That's some great foreplay. Can I tell you?
It didn't hurt the proceedings. Yeah. Go ahead. How high is the athlete?
Priority wise, not just athlete, but your long the wingspan on a woman is that important?
The wingspan, it's not huge. That's true. Right. I felt awkward. It was a strange thing to be commenting on. But she was self-conscious about it. I wanted to reassure her, and the truth of the matter was it actually did excite me, so I thought that was fair to say.
I
want somebody who enjoys getting out there and doing things.
Right.
You're being active?
Being playing tennis or whatever. I don't care what you do. Yoga, basketball, you go skiing, whatever it is, do something.
Something active. There's
right.
Let's
not
wrong
just,
with that.
You know, let's not just kick back on the couch and drink all day. That would be a negative.
Right.
There are a lot of women that are great athletes out there.
Yes.
But I don't know. Maybe if you're so tuned into being a great athlete, the social end of things suffers a little bit.
Well, right. We have to have a balance here. Listen, I've had four long-term relationships, Wendy. Four.
At different times?
Yes.
Good.
Yes. I started all the way back in college until like the mid-20s and the early 30s, and then my last one, which was 4 years. I did learn.
That's a long time.
Yeah, that is a long time. What happened?
Well, so what happens is, and this is what I've learned about myself, which is why I'm overdone now, Wendy, and I feel like I have to, like, it's like I'm talking to mom here. I gotta validate myself here. But I learned that in any relationship historically I would get super nervous about the whole we are together forever, ball and chain, all that. That made me nervous. And I used that as a way to stop myself from going forward, finding different little faults. And then whatever it would be, I'd build them up. And then I'd just get out of it. But now I have realized that I'm always going to be a little fearful of that or a lot.
Everyone is a little bit.
And that's fine.
Not fearful, but it's different.
You're cautious.
Yeah.
Right?
So that's right. So
can I guess something?
Yes, please.
You mentioned
guess.
You've had four long-term relationships in your life. My guess is that you've been the one that's broken those relationships off and not the girl.
Or Chinese water torture. I don't give them what they want and eventually they leave, that type of thing.
See, the passive aggressive way.
Yep. We've been working on that one too. Passive aggressive, no bueno in dating or in life period for that matter.
It's when you get to a point in a relationship that's 4 years is a considerable amount of time together.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden it's sort of like the pressure's on,
mm-hmm.
you know, like you can't just keep dating. I mean, you could look at Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell.
Right.
But did you feel pressure that, you know, it's been 4 years now I'm going to have to marry her? I mean,
no. Well, in that last situation, I mean, she just became convinced that he's never going to do it. I want to get married. Mm-hmm. I'm moving back to New York. Bye.
Oh, yeah. I kind of agree with her though. If after 4 years you'd think,
well, it's okay, but we don't need to air out the whole differences there. She wasn't exactly a saint.
So maybe it wasn't the perfect. But do you know that maybe you won't find? I mean, Bill talks about finding his soulmate, and some people do, and I might have. I don't know. I love Jim. He's my best friend.
There you go.
I mean, you know, thinking when I was younger, I always thought I'm going to marry a very dark complected guy.
Yeah.
And Jim is not. I mean, you have this vision in your head, but then something clicks and you're like, this person's pretty perfect for me.
Right. Well, I think in my current state right now, I'm trying to date a wide range and a wide way of look, the whole thing. Blonde, right. Brunette, tall, short, this, that, the whole. I mean,
long arms are a plus.
Must have
right.
long arms.
End of the day, you need the connection, right?
Right.
So that's really what it comes
down
to.
On the good side, and I give you big credit for this, you're not just looking, it doesn't seem like you're looking for a quick one night stand or anything like that. You seem to be looking for something that is long lasting, possibly forever. And I think that's good for you.
That's correct, Bill. At this point in my life, it's certainly, I mean, intercourse is wonderful,
but
we'd actually like to have a real connection before that went down, and you were actually building something rather than just getting active, right, so to speak.
And you used that phraseology, intercourse with her, I guess.
Yes, I do.
Would you like to have intercourse?
Well, right. we are on 720 WGN. Let's keep. I guess we
decorum.
Right.
Absolutely. Mark Harmon is here. He's looking for a mate. 10th caller. As we went through. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, it's us. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Our friend Mark Harmon is here, and there's a good reason for it. They're bringing back the show, The Love Connection. So the producer said, we want to come on, and we want you guys, me and Wendy, to introduce us to an eligible bachelor there that you know that we can set up on one of our shows. Well, we immediately thought of Mark Harmon. Handsome as all get out. Smells like a dozen roses. We said, let's get Mark Harmon in here and set him up with the producers. And then when we mentioned Mark's name to the producers, they say, yeah, we're not showing up.
Yeah.
So Mark's still here, and we're trying to figure out why you're not with somebody.
Well, it could be, you know, I did go on a dating game back, it's roughly 20 years ago now, maybe 18 on NBC5.
Did you?
Yeah. And it was me and two other dudes, right? And I did not get picked. And maybe it was the pain of not getting picked right there that is still just resonating to this day.
I bet.
You know, you think too much. Seriously. I mean, if you fall in love with somebody and, you know, there are issues, then it might not be the right person. When you fall in love with somebody and want to do whatever you can to make that work, it doesn't matter if there are family issues or other things. You haven't found the right person yet, evidently.
The whole thinking less thing, how do you do that exactly?
I don't know. It's really hard. Candy Crush, I recommend. Right. Turn your brain
off.
But
Mark, people have said to you, love happens when you least expect it. If you go out looking for it, you're not going to find it. But if you're not thinking about it, it just happens. I'm sure people have given you that advice.
Yeah,
right?
I get confused by that one, too. What am I supposed to do? Sit in the corner and not be on every dating app and trying to go out on dates? I mean, what does that look like?
It's hard to date now. Al has called in with a suggestion, which you may be aware about.
So we were getting an Al list, but okay, Al.
No, this is different.
Hi, okay. Al. This is Mark Harmon.
Hey, guys. I really enjoy listening to you guys.
Thank you.
Hey, Mark. I've also enjoyed listening to all the tennis talkers and now the tennis player. So keep it up.
Are you calling to date him, Al?
No, I'm not.
But you do have an idea.
Well, there was a site called Tennis Date. .com where you could actually, you know, meet somebody who wants to play tennis. And it doesn't, you know, it's going to be just, you know, non-physical, if you will. It could just, you know, meet some other tennis players. And you like athletic people. There's fitnesssingles.com. There's tennismatch.com, tennispassions.com. So
have you tried all these, Mark?
Yeah, Al, no, I haven't. Al, just a question. Do they list the level on there? Do they say if they're a 3-5-4-0? I'm kidding. Al, great suggestion. I appreciate it. But you know what I'm talking about, Bill.
I do know.
Thank you, Al.
You want somebody who's compatible, but can also hit a backhand.
Right. They got to be able to do both.
Right.
Forehand and backhand, ideally.
Back before I was married, before Wendy was married, the internet wasn't a component when it came to dating, and now it's a major component. What has your luck been with those dating websites? Have you done okay or not?
You certainly have the ability to keep yourself active. That's
sure.
There's a plethora of women out there.
Yeah.
So, I think
volume's not an issue.
Right.
Right.
And quality
though.
But there's great quality, I think, everywhere. Sure.
Yeah.
I don't think you can ever. In my expert single 43 way, I don't think you just know where it's coming from. It could come from a dating app. It could come from a setup. It could come from who knows, right?
But here's the thing, and as my wise old aunt, who's no longer with us.
Aunt?
Yeah, aunt. Yeah. We just called her aunt.
Yeah.
She always said, you know, Wendy, try it out. You can never have too many friends, which is really kind of great advice. If you do go through tennis.com or whatever that is, and you meet somebody to play tennis with, maybe you're not having a romantic connection, but maybe it's a new friend. Maybe as you meet her and you meet a friend of hers, that's right. Where the least expected
sure.
comes in.
Right, exactly, which is... a great way to, that's why, I mean, as far as like just going out right now, it's like, I'm willing to go out, period. I don't need to be massively attracted by your picture online to go out with you. Maybe there's a lot more going on. Who knows?
Mark, I've seen this in movies and I've seen this on sitcoms. I don't know if this happens in real life, but there's always two people, a guy and a girl, who are really good friends for years, and they make a pact and they say, if we're 45 and neither of us are married, we're getting married. Have you made that pact with anybody?
I did, but she got married.
Oh,
without you?
A traitor.
I know. It's unbelievable, right?
That's just
I had that one locked in. It was a good one.
Don't you have any friends, girlfriend? I was friends with Jimmy Mack for like 3 or 4 years before we even started dating. I always thought he was cute, but, you know, we were just friends.
Right, the actual friend connection. Yeah, I mean, no one leaps to mind on that one.
You need more friends. 773 says, my son was 44 when he married and had their daughter. I almost gave up. This must be from his mother.
Oh.
So, I mean, and it is hard to meet people as you get older, but there are more ways to do it, which Bill pointed out.
My brother was 46, got married, has a kid. That
so
happened.
It's possible. It shows you that it's that close to home.
Absolutely.
Mark, how about this one? I almost offered up my 38-year-old daughter to Mark until he said he had 4 serious relationships. We're out.
What,
wow,
why?
That's rough.
I don't understand why you'd be out.
It's like buying used tires.
See, at this point, I don't get that, because what do you want me to have not dated at all? That would be a bigger concern, I would think. Well,
that would be a huge
Maybe
concern.
Maybe because there's no end to that. 4 serious relationships with no payoff. Maybe that's what she means.
Right. Well, we all have our growth areas, so that's my next frontier, I guess.
I got one more. 772 says, my 26-year-old single artsy fartsy daughter lives in Chicago, 6 feet tall, not sure of arm length, runs as a hobby, ran the Chicago Marathon this year. Any interest?
6 feet tall, 26 years old. I mean, you're talking about a 17-year age range. Does she want to go out with an older dude? If she does, I'll go out with her.
All right, Jim, you need to text us more information and then contact your artsy-fartsy daughter.
Mark, I'm not a religious man, but I will pray for you.
You guys have been great. I appreciate the support.
We have not.
You have. You have. You brought me in.
We want you to be, you know that, both Wendy and I, every time your name comes up, we go, how in the world is he by himself?
I know. I don't get it.
It doesn't make sense.
I feel legit caring and support from both of you, and I thank you sincerely, and I mean that. I don't know if we have got to the end point from this last 20 minutes of radio, but we didn't go backwards either.
No.
So I thank you greatly.
That's progress.
Although now I've decided to go through all my contacts and
see if there's somebody.
Now you're cooking with gas.
All right.
Look at that look. Jesus.
We'll find you somebody.
Well, there might be someone now that I'm thinking about it.
All right.
Dig deep.
Mark, good luck. Always great to see you.
We love you, Mark.
The way you said that, I feel like I'm never going to see you guys again.
That's not true.
Thank you so much.
That's Mark Carmen. He needs a woman so bad. We'll take a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Tim, thanks very much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder, and we're joined in studio by our friend Patrick McDonald. Patrick is the fine film critic over at HollywoodChicago.com, also the chief guide for ChicagoFilmTour.com. If you've not availed yourself of the opportunity to see Patrick's tour, you need to. It's all the greatest sites and locations that movies have been filmed in and around Chicago, and you do a great job with that. How are you?
Good. Happy New Year to both of you.
Thank you.
I know.
Thank you very much.
What's the cutoff for saying that?
Well, I think the first time you see someone after the change of the year, you can cut it off after that.
Yeah, you're fine.
So we're done now.
I thought the end of January, maybe.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Really quickly, Wendy and I, yesterday, as the news broke about Mary Tyler Moore, we talked about her. And again this morning, her name certainly came up. Aside from her work on the Mary Tyler Moore Show and on the Dick Van Dyke Show, you have to admit, she made some pretty good movies, especially Ordinary People.
Well, the interesting thing about her film career is that she made both notorious cult movies and you know, Ordinary People, which is the Academy Award nominated film that she was in.
What a goodie.
But you want to talk about change of habit with Elvis Presley. Come
mentioned on. It yesterday.
Yes.
One of the most ridiculous movies of all time. Be just, honest. It's awful.
And what a pairing. Elvis and Maura Petrie.
Yeah. Did it work at all?
No, it's horrendous.
Well, I think it works as something that's so bad it's good. Elvis plays a doctor in it.
Mary Tyler Moore is a nun, and Elvis at some point is trying to decide between her and now how does this work? Is she deciding?
She's deciding.
She's
between
deciding.
Between God and the doctor?
God and the king.
Right. Wow. And doesn't she
It's a tough decision, man.
Yeah, baby.
Isn't there some scene where she keeps looking at him and then looking at the crucifix and looking at him and looking at a crucifix?
That's funny.
It's ridiculous.
Is it supposed to be funny?
No.
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 All right, now I have to see it. What's it called?
Change of Habit.
All right.
Yeah, it's
and,
really awful.
And there's an oddball, and I'm sure you've seen it, Bill. What's so bad about feeling good?
Talked about that with George Lampard.
Oh, it was a 3:30 after school movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's right up there with Cold Turkey. You know, it's those two satires of the American dream back then.
Yeah.
But, you know, that would be ripe for a remake, I think.
I'm surprised they haven't.
You know, with our contentious society now, it would be very interesting to remake that.
I want to throw one more in. It's a made-for-TV movie, but it really showed that Mary Tyler Moore was more than just a comedic actress. It's a movie called First You Cry about Betty Rollins. Mm, yes. It's her struggle with cancer. And I think that was the first time people realized she could be a very, very strong, serious actress if she wanted to be.
And also, I'll note her PBS pairing with Dick Van Dyke on The Gin Game.
I totally forgot about that.
Yes, yeah. Where they swear like sailors in it.
She really was a well-rounded woman. Seriously. I mean, she did work clean. A listener called earlier. But think back in the day, the Dick Van Dyke Show was very clean. Mm-hmm. And even Mary Tyler Moore, I don't know, she pushed the envelope a little bit. Mm-hmm. But she was so well-rounded. Just so funny. Such a great actress in drama. I mean, really, such a wonderful woman.
And she starred as a dancer. Which is pretty amazing, you know, and at 17 years old was a major commercial player for Hot Point.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
what a career.
Yeah.
What a career.
She'll be missed. Mary Tyler Moore, no question about it. All right. This is an awful story. Casey Affleck, who I guess some people will know as the younger brother, as Ben Affleck. And
he'll always be known as that.
I guess he will. but I have to say, He himself has also done some good work, including this movie, Manchester by the Sea, which really, as sad of a movie as it is, and it is, it's tragically sad. It's a really thought-provoking, well-made movie. Well, he's being criticized by a lot of people, most notably an actress named Constance Wu, who people will know as one of the stars of Fresh Off the Boat, for some things that Casey was involved in a couple of years ago that are awful.
Well, I think this is one of the strangest show business stories that has ever come up in, let's say, the last 20 years. It had to do with that fake documentary that Joaquin Phoenix and Casey Affleck worked on called I'm Not There.
Yeah.
If anybody recalls, it was about Joaquin Phoenix quitting acting, growing a big bushy beard, and becoming a rap star, I believe. And then Casey Affleck was the director of this film that followed him through that process.
And for people who don't know, here's a little bit of background on this.
Yes.
Casey Affleck is married to Joaquin Phoenix's sister, Summer. So they got to know each other through family reasons and then decided to make this mockumentary, not even a real documentary.
Right. It's a fine line. It's a fine line. But anyway, what's odd about this is that it seems they set this up so they could hire women to, you know, to be with them.
Yeah.
And essentially, I mean, it seemed like everybody that was on that set who was a woman had some problems with the way they were treated.
Right.
And it goes beyond just making remarks. It's also in the realm of, I would say, unquestionably breaking somebody's territory or their space. So not only was that weird failure of a mockumentary done, but it was done, and in the background there was some really harsh things going on.
Two women sued Casey Affleck for sexual harassment. Both those cases were settled out of court, and Constance Wu, the actress from Fresh Off the Boat, has sent out a series of tweets saying this is a despicable thing that Hollywood is doing and glorifying this guy who has harassed women and has settled out of court, and if we don't put a stop to this, it's going to get worse before it gets better.
You know, our president just settled out of court for his university. I mean, how do we separate this stuff? You know, we've got the Woody Allen case. We have the Casey Affleck case. Bill Cosby.
Marlon Brando.
I mean, the list goes on and on. I mean, if we appreciate the art, we appreciate the art for what it is. And if we don't appreciate the person and we can't disassociate it, then you have to make your own decision about that. Not that this is bad, but I think that Constance Wu tweeting about this tweeting stuff and Twitter itself. You know, when you write something down, you might as well tattoo it on your forehead. You know, in the future, lawyers will push one button and everything will spew out, no matter what case you have, no matter what you're sued for. If you're in a divorce case, suddenly all your social media stuff is going to be in their hand.
Yeah.
And it's going to condemn you because everybody writes down stupid stuff.
She says, Constant Wu says, I have been counseled to not talk about this for my career's sake.
Interesting.
Blank my career, then. I'm a woman and a human first. That's what my craft is built on. It's uncomfortable in many different reasons. Number one, if you're the average film goer or television viewer, it's sometimes hard to separate the actor from the craft or director in some cases. But at the same time, I mean, I find myself, there are certain people who I know about things that they have done or alleged to have done. And it does temper my decisions sometimes. Do I want to spend money? Mel Gibson is a great example of this. I heard great things about Heartbreak Ridge. And then I think to myself, do I want to plunk down $14 to Mel Gibson to see a movie that he worked on when I know that in the past he's been a horrible human being?
I'm not defending Casey Affleck on this. I read about the case and it was bad. I mean, between both him and Joaquin Phoenix really need to look inside themselves. They were not young men then.
Right.
It's not like you can say, oh, the 22-year-old hormonal guy. No, these were known individuals who had to know the consequences of behaving like this, but they certainly didn't follow through on it.
Scott has a question, and I kind of do too, and I have to be honest with you, till this was brought up by the Fresh Off the Boat actress, I wasn't aware of it. Mm-hmm. Scott, you have a question and a good one.
Yes, I have a question. First and foremost, I'd like to say whatever they did, if they did, is despicable. But if these women settle out of court, aren't they essentially saying, I'm giving up my right to pursue this in a court? And, I mean, who made them settle out of court?
So and why did they? That's a great question.
Because a lot of money was offered to them.
Okay, so if money is offered, you're taking one moral, which is sexual assault or whatever he did to a woman, and now you're trading that moral for money? So how do these women justify saying he's wrong while they're essentially saying my morals are going to be low because I want money over justice? That doesn't make sense.
It's a good question.
I need the wisdom of Solomon for this. It's possible they don't want that dirty laundry aired. And if I can get a settlement, basically they were contract players. They were on this movie to give their services $4. And they found that this was happening to them. So they, you know, did sue for harassment. And they went to the table and said, listen, what do you need here? Well, maybe we need to be paid extra for our services.
And then this goes
away.
Given
we had to go through this, now, and we don't have to air this dirty laundry.
But look, it's out.
So if they don't want to air the dirty laundry, why is she tweeting about it?
No. That's
Constance Wu.
Someone from an actress from a show called Fresh Off the Boat.
Okay, I have another question for you. It's directed towards your audience. Doesn't anybody have an older brother anymore where if somebody harasses their little sister, somebody's going to get whooped? Is there? I mean, I know it's not right, but why do these people put themselves in? If I'm at work and I'm getting harassed, I'm going to make a statement that day and possibly not go to work the next day. If you're on a movie set being harassed, doesn't anybody say, you know what, I'm not going back.
Right.
I'm going to tell somebody about immediately, not this, you know, we're going to wait a couple of months, we're going to wait whatever. Why don't people do things immediately?
I think some people do and some people don't, and that's really up to the individual, but it's a good question.
Well, I also think it's difficult for men to speak to this. I want to put that out there right now, because I think if men had to go through what women go through, even on a daily basis, there would be a different kind of attitude out there. There's not enough empathy.
And I want to just quickly tag this on. We have to take a quick break, but there was a movie that came out earlier this year called Birth of a Nation that everybody was talking about as an odds-on favorite to either win the Academy Award or get a whole bunch of nominations. And Nate Parker is the guy behind this movie who wrote and directed it, and he had kind of similar allegations against him, and it kind of sunk him and the movie, don't you think?
Well, that's difficult to say. I saw the film before I heard of the allegations, and I was surprised that it was so overpraised out of Sundance. Yeah. I think it came off of the hashtag Oscars So White problem, and suddenly we had this film that was, you know, projecting this image of African Americans in a time in history, and I think in Sundance was just swept up in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 6 months go by, it's released in the regular theaters, and suddenly you're saying, well, this is a good movie, but it's not that inspirational greatness that we thought we would see, at least mm-hmm. this was in my
You don't think it had anything to do with his extracurricular activities at all?
the fact that everybody kind of went south on it.
There's a lot of permutations about this story. In fact, Oprah Winfrey had volunteered to him to allow him to air what happened and kind of make a national forgiveness, and he refused to do it. Now, the case was dropped against him.
Yeah.
But I think it was settled for his friend, if I'm correct, and I hope I am. So obviously he wanted to keep this under the carpet, and in that sense, it started a backlash.
Scott, thank you for your call.
All right, how about a break? A quick break, and then more with Patrick McDonald of HollywoodChicago.com. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We are talking to a film critic for HollywoodChicago.com, chief guide for the Chicago Film Tour, a friend of the show. His name is Patrick McDonald.
Also apparently a social scientist today.
Yes, social scientist Patrick McDonald. Hollywood social scientist, Chicago.com.
I have a question. I was quizzed by my kids and husband. Hey, do you know the new title of the new Star Wars movie? And I said, no. And why was there such hoopla involving this?
The Last Jedi. Yeah.
Why was it kept a secret for a while?
Well, you know, they drip out the information about these films when they see they need a headline. Mm-hmm. And obviously the slack period in January and February is a good time to say, hey, here's the title. And, you know, it's somebody said it's alternative facts, The Last Jedi.
Do we know who The Last Jedi refers to? Do we know exactly which cast member it is?
Well, that's the speculation right now. They're pointing towards Daisy Ridley as that.
It'd
be interesting because it's a quasi religious power.
Mm-hmm.
It would be interesting to see how that would die off.
Yeah.
So I think that's the mystery.
So The Last Jedi, and Carrie Fisher has filmed her role for that particular one, correct?
Yes, that is correct. And I don't know if they will be doing some adjustments to bring that role to a completion or not.
But with Peter Cushing, who has...
He's been gone a while.
Got to be honest with you. When I saw that, I just go, oh, Tarkin's back. I didn't realize that he was no longer with us. Wouldn't they maybe be able to keep the storyline for the third movie and just use the...
It's possible that they would use that. But the early reports are they are not going to do that. They're not going to manufacture the character again to... it could be to tie up some of the storylines, but... I don't think they're going to use it going forward like they did with Peter Cushing. So,
Wendy and I discussed this. To me, it was a little distracting. I knew that Peter Cushing had died, and yet there he was in a bunch of scenes in the last Star Wars movie.
I had no idea.
It was very... I wish it was more fluid, but to me it was very alarming that it was... I mean, and there are other CGI characters all throughout the movie, but just knowing it wasn't really him was very disturbing to me.
You're a realist.
I guess. I guess I am.
Jimmy Mack should type out a prep sheet for you.
I don't really want it. And, you know, when I ask him, he'd still be talking. So I want to ask someone else once in a while to get their take on the Star Wars universe.
Patrick, how about this? We've got 13 seconds left. Tell us everything we need to see and not see over the weekend.
Okay, the Matthew McConaughey film, Gold, 3 out of 5. He acts so hard, he turns inside out. It's Treasure of Sierra Madre meets Wall Street. Tony Erdmann, 5 out of 5, a perfect score from me. It's a Romanian film. It will make you love life again.
Wow. Let's all go see it.
Wendy only sees Romanian films, by the way. Did you know that about her? Won't see anything made in America, only Romanian movies. Nadia Comăneci movie was good, you said?
I loved it.
Yeah? I'll give you a cheat sheet on that one.
Give it a 10.0.
And finally, The Salesman from Asghar Farhadi out of Iran, 4 out of 5. It's about two Iranian couple doing Death of a Salesman in Iran, and some incident happens to them that counterplays that play.
That sounds interesting.
It's
sounds
very interesting.
That's Patrick McDonald, film critic over at HollywoodChicago.com, and yes, also a social scientist when he needs to be, chief guide for ChicagoFilmTour.com. Thank you, Patrick.
All right. Thank you, Patrick. Bill and Wendy, Firehouse Subs lunch break. It's time for that right now. You can win a Firehouse Subs gift card be caller number 7, lucky 7, 312-981-7200. If you don't win the Firehouse Subs gift card, you can go to a Firehouse Subs, ask for the Bill and Wendy special. You'll get the make-your-own sub, build a medium sub with one of your favorite meats, either turkey ham or roast beef, and then you can put your own stuff on it, lettuce, tomato, mayo, mustard, pickle spear on the side, of course. The make-your-own sub Bill and Wendy special is only $4.99, but you have to ask for it. Find a Firehouse Sub near you at firehousesubs.com. Firehouse Subs, the hero of all subs. And congratulations to Joe from Lakemore.
He is our winner. Congratulations, Joe. More chances tomorrow and the rest of the week and then next week and beyond. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. The song you're hearing is quickly climbing the pop charts, number one right now in America. It's a Peter Dinklage song.
Don't stop it. Kevin made us listen to this yesterday.
Forced us to, against our will, against our better judgment and will.
The best part's coming up right here.
Well, that's what you said yesterday.
That part is pretty good. I mean, all of it's good, but that part in particular is really good.
But all it has is a Peter Dinklage action figure spinning around on a...
The video?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Kevin, I guess when he said, you know, stay the course, we thought something was going to happen. He goes, oh, no, nothing happens. It's just this lovely singing.
So many bands over the years have paid tribute to Peter Dinklage in song, but I think it's this one that kind of breaks through. This is the one that I think speaks to everybody, this Peter Dinklage song. I love it.
But then we watched Peter Dinklage actually singing with the band, and this is better than Peter Dinklage.
Yeah, he's not very good. This isn't my top five Peter Dinklage songs, though.
It is?
Maybe number one.
Is
maybe.
That right? Yeah, it's really good.
But
did
made
you ever
us...
hear the dance club version of this? Because I go to the dance clubs at night, and everyone's playing the dance club version of that, and it's kicking.
You know, I don't know what to believe in this world anymore, seriously, right. Because maybe you
right.
do.
Right. In a year when a guy from a reality show became the president of the United States and the Cubs won the World Series, anything can happen now. That's the beauty of what we're experiencing. Anything can happen right now.
Did you watch any of the ABC News coverage with David Muir last night?
I heard snippets of it. I didn't see it, but I heard a bunch of snippets from it.
Well, I got to change the Peter Dinklage subject, which I just wanted everybody else to have that earworm because we had it all day yesterday.
Sure.
And I had forgotten about it when we talked about Mary Tyler Moore's death. And thank you, Bill, for putting it back in my head.
You're very welcome.
I like to go on Twitter to see what's happening because, lo and behold, you don't know what's going to happen 1 second from the next mm-hmm. in this new world mm-hmm. that we have. So I saw former president of Mexico, Vicente Fox, mm-hmm. who had posted, you know, a tweet that addressed Donald Trump, mm-hmm. his hashtag, you know, or not hashtag, but his handle, at the real Donald Trump. And
are they called handles?
No.
They're not? That's CB radio lingo, right?
Yeah, I okay. kind of went
but
back
it's the,
in time.
It's the version of that. It's,
yes.
Okay.
And so Vicente Fox was saying, you know, Donald Trump, we are not paying for this effing wall ever. And then the hashtag was effing wall.
And that came from Vicente Fox.
Well, that's what the, you know, I did a little work on that, a little research, because I'm like, is this really the former president yeah. of Mexico? And it is his account. It's verified.
Yeah.
And
he has been very vocal in his colorful in his language when yeah. it comes to this.
Right. And I know he's the former president. He's not the current president. But there is some tension going on between the current president
Nieto
and Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And it seems to be the consensus that they're not paying for it.
They're not paying for it. And if at the risk of saying something extremely treasonous, let me say this. I'm siding with Mexico. And here's the example I will cite. Let's say you and your neighbor, you live right next door to each other, and your kids keep going over into their yard. And the neighbors go, well, we don't want their kids in our yard. We're just going to build a fence. And they do so, and then they send you the bill for that fence. Are you going to pay for that?
No.
No.
Isn't that kind of the analogy?
Yes, it's perfect.
I know Mexico. Well, Trump's version of this is they'll pay for it some way, so he'll throw some sort of a tax on them, and that'll be. But if I'm them, I'm saying, you want to build the wall? Have at it. It's on your dime, not on ours.
And that was brought up with David Muir and the president. And the reason I watch this, by the way, is because when I was looking at this little Twitter war going on between Vicente Fox and Donald Trump,
mm-hmm.
I do follow Trump. I know says he has a lot of Twitter followers, and they're all my fans. I'm not really a fan. I like to know, you know what? I feel like I'm going to be told what's going on with this country first on Twitter than before I hear it in the news.
Right.
So I want to be sure I'm following him.
Right.
And Donald had tweeted, watch me on ABC News in 10 minutes. And I'm like, all right, I will. So I tuned in and watched President Donald J. Trump, Don John, with David Muir.
Yeah.
And David Muir was doing an excellent job pushing forward. Like Donald would go off on his, he'd be asked a question and he would kind of commandeer it back to what he wanted to talk about, and David Muir pressed him pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
But the wall was brought up, and it's like, you know, don't you think a wall is going to create anger? And Donald Trump is saying, anger? That's all we have is anger. This world is angry. There's so much anger, I'm paraphrasing. But so why can't we be nicer to one another? Do we want to keep that anger going? Is that the mission?
Even if he's right, I don't think he is, but even if he's right, building a wall isn't going to put a stop to the anger he's talking about.
No, but that's what he was saying. We're already angry, so what's the difference?
As long as we're already angry, we might as well take it to the 10th level.
If you haven't watched it, Bill, you haven't watched it yet, and listeners, if you haven't watched it yet, find it online and watch it. I like to think he's our president. We're all in this together. I have hope. After watching that, I really feel the wheels are coming
really?
Off.
Really? It's that bad?
Yes.
There's like I said, I heard a bunch of snippets from it. So one of the snippets has Trump kind of schooling David Muir a little bit about the way the press does their job. And he says, hey, I probably shouldn't be saying this, but if you want to see the right way to do it, look at Fox's coverage of the inauguration and then look at your coverage and everybody else's coverage. If you want to be accurate, do it the way Fox did it. He's so hung up on the inauguration numbers, it's frightening. Like even though there's so many other things that should be entertaining his mind right now, for some reason, that's the one thing that he just keeps going back to, is how many people were at the inauguration or listened to it or viewed it. But even if it's very possible with all the platforms there were to either listen to or see the inauguration, it's extremely possible. It's actually probable that he did have more people tuned in to see it, but what he's not taking into account is a lot of people were doing it not from the positive standpoint. I'm not a fan of Donald Trump's, but I watched it start to finish.
I'm following him on Twitter, not because I'm a fan.
Right.
But I mean, people, listen, I know we're getting texts already. Stop with the politics. Unfortunately, the politics are ruling what's going on in the news cycle right now.
Sure.
And David Muir brought that up about, Mr. President, you say you're talking about the numbers. They're not correct. You know, do you think the American public is saying, why don't you focus on real issues? And he's like, this is the real issue. Again, you got to watch it.
I will see it.
I'm, again, he's our president, and I'm hoping against hope that the next 4 years are great for this country because, come on, we're all in this together. I don't want it to be bad for our country.
I have never wanted so badly to be wrong about anything in my life than I am about this. I want so badly for 4 years from now for everybody to go, see, you doubted this guy, and look where we are. I hope so badly that's the case.
I think there are a lot of people in your boat, and there are a lot of people that think he is the man to change the country. And if he is, show us what you got. That's all I'm saying. But watch this interview, Trump fan or not. He is the president of the United States. Watch this interview, ABC News with David Muir, because honestly, Bill, I have never felt so strongly in my life that the wheels are coming off. Like, I don't even know if he wants to be president anymore.
So with him touting this, you said he took to social media to remind people on Twitter mm-hmm. to see him. Does he believe he's painted in a positive light in this?
That's the biggest question. And it seemed, you know, that it was recorded earlier. Stevie, maybe you can help me on this. Was that something that was pre-recorded earlier? I don't believe it was live.
It was not live.
Because
no,
you could tell when it was edited and such.
Yeah,
but
they had actually released clips of it before it aired.
So what's in it for Trump to tell people, hey, watch Man ABC in a positive way? Because it didn't sound last night with all the snippets I heard and from everybody who's been talking about it today. It doesn't sound like he comes out looking good.
In his own eyes, he might be. He did mention several times Chicago was brought up, and he said, we cannot have this carnage. We cannot have this going on, not while I'm president. I'm president, you know, so I cannot allow that to happen. Mm-hmm. Did I mention I was president? It's just, mm-hmm. it really was an eye-opener for me that the wheels are coming off this bus.
Yeah. And now you have guys, was it Carl Bernstein, Steve, earlier today who was questioning the president's mental state? It was Carl Bernstein, right?
Yeah, I think that was from last night.
Yeah.
I'm
and other people
you.
Have done the same, just going, uh-oh, we got to do an evaluation on him. Uh-oh.
I mean, this is
a little late for that.
The man leading our country.
Right.
And it just, if you have seen it and you want to talk about it, if you haven't, please see it. You can see it online. 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
All right, it's us. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. We're talking about a David Muir interview that took place last night. It aired last night. I've only heard snippets of it. You saw it in its entirety. Some of it a little alarming.
I just... I don't know how to explain this other than we're in this together. I know he's our president. But last night it looked like someone who had a lot of issues. Oh. And you mentioned the best question of it all. He promoted the fact that he was going to be on. Like his Twitter feed said, watch me in 10 minutes on ABC News.
Which in and of itself, you know, presidents have access to the networks almost anytime they want. How many times you pick the president, they show up on the network TV all the time. It's just weird that he was telling his Twitter followers, guess what, I'm going to be on TV. Turn on your TV. I'm going to be on in 10 minutes. That happens all the time.
And he, I'm sure, saw it before it aired because it was pre-recorded.
Well, maybe not.
No, he might not have seen it. He just wouldn't have known how.
Right. He knows he recorded it, but
he doesn't
know what footage they were using. They probably spent hours and hours and hours with him and only used, you know, what was it, 10 minutes long, 15 minutes long?
It was an hour.
Was it an hour?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The full interview was an hour?
Well, there were breaks in between, but yeah, I was watching from 7 to 8.
Oh, all right.
Or right. 8 to 9, I think it was.
But
I don't
wasn't
remember.
The point is it wasn't in real time. They
right.
You know, they shot him for quite a while and then edited it down.
He also was talking about the voter fraud and all those 3 million people who wouldn't have voted for him.
Yeah.
But the point is, you know, it has to be done legally. And David Muir said flat out, and he's reading quotes, this person said this person said that, and all accounts say that that's absolutely not the case, that all these votes were illegal and wrong and everything. He's like, we have to get to the bottom of this. It's like he David Muir, well, here, let Gene say it first, because this is exactly the case. Gene, you saw it?
Yes, I did. And I am like you. I am not a Trump supporter, but I'm addicted now, I guess, to following everything he does and says. Because it's just like upset every time I see him, it's upsetting me, but I just need to see all this stuff. And I was just surprised, and I commended David Muir for his professionalism, that he didn't jump out of his chair a couple of times and just want to shake him or slap him across the face or something.
Or laugh mockingly, you know, it's
well,
like,
and that too, you're right. Exactly. Because some of the things coming out of his mouth are just absolutely, I don't understand. Everything he says is a superlative. Either it's the greatest when it's referring to something that he's doing, or it's the worst when it's something somebody else is doing. There's just no middle ground.
Yeah.
I mean, the world, according to him, is just totally angry. Everyone hates one another. And, you know, I live in, you know, a smaller town here, and we seem to be able to, you know, get together and do things normally. But there's an underlying thing, because you're not sure when you're talking to somebody whose side they're on. And who, you know, so you kind of tiptoe around some of this stuff because you're afraid to upset anybody or shake anything out of, you know, and, but yet, I don't know. It's just, to me, it's very upsetting. And unfortunately, I'm retired. I have a lot of time on my hands. So I'm just addicted to Facebook. I'm addicted to the TV news shows. I think I'm going to have to go back to, though they're few and far between, I think I'm going to have to go back to like soap operas or something on television because, I mean, this is just getting to be absolutely ridiculous.
But hasn't it become, I know a lot of people know Donald Trump primarily from his work on a reality show.
Right.
But seriously. But now he's turned this into, this has become almost a reality show.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Gene, thank you so much for your call and enjoy your retirement. Try crocheting. Maybe that'll help.
Crocheting is the answer, Wendy.
Or whittling. I was going to say to whittle away the time. Maybe she should just whittle.
Can't go wrong with whittling.
I just, please watch it. Make your own decision.
Yeah, yeah.
But in my opinion, it's almost like he's delusional.
Well, yeah.
First time I've really, really seen it.
People have alluded to that. But you get nervous when a guy like Carl Bernstein, who's a very well-respected reporter, if you're familiar with All the President's Men, that was his book, Carl Woodward and Woodward and Bernstein were the guys who wrote that. So when he says we really have to take a look at his mental state right now, you start to wonder, you know.
I'm concerned for him and for us. It just didn't seem like a rational person talking last night.
I do want to say that Bernstein's got a little bluster too.
Oh, always.
Yeah.
Always.
And John McCain had a quote because there is, again, watch it, but Donald Trump was saying he totally is for waterboarding. He did say that it's not up to him. He's going to take the lead.
But it is up to him.
It is now.
But he, the thing.
But he did say that he was going to let
Mattis, Secretary Mattis,
and Pompeo make the decision and whatever they recommend.
The woman from Grey's Anatomy is going to make this decision?
He will follow their lead, but David Muir reiterated and said, but you think, you know, waterboarding is effective and that you're for it. And he's like, absolutely. And then John McCain comes out saying it doesn't work. It's counterproductive because you will say whatever it is to get that finished, so you're not really revealing any information that's useful.
I thought one of the most alarming moments with him, and this was way prior to the election, was when they were showing him what our nuclear capabilities were. And he said, if we have all these nuclear capabilities, why aren't we using them? And they had to explain to him the aftermath of what that would be.
Got to see this again. David Muir asked him, so I understand you got the codes.
Yeah.
Does that keep you up at night? Does that make you nervous? And he said, makes me, I don't know about nervous, but you got to watch it. I'm going to try and find some audio. Just watch it. He's the president of our United States of America. And I might be really afraid for the first time.
Oh, all right. We'll take a quick break and then more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks. A week from Sunday, Wendy, is the big game. Legally, I cannot say Super Bowl, and you can't say Super Bowl, because the people who run the Super Bowl would come in and haul us off to jail.
You just said it.
What, Super Bowl? You can't say it. It's illegal to say it. You have to call it the big game.
When did that happen, by the way? I know that they trademarked it, and you can't use it in any advertising,
right,
but you can certainly say Super Bowl, can't you?
You can't, no. Because you're in the media and I'm in the media, so just by saying it, you're opening up a can of worms.
But no one's making money for what we just said.
I get paid every time I say Super Bowl. You don't get any money for that?
You always have something going on the side.
They send me a little check when I say Super Bowl, but I can't say it, so I'm just going to say big game, and it's a week from Sunday.
See, that shows what the fool you are, because I get paid every time I say the big game.
You do?
Right.
That shouldn't be.
And
That's
no one
crazy.
Completely under the radar, the
That's
big
crazy.
Game.
I get paid every time I say, let's get ready to rumble. Michael Buffer has
you
to pay me.
You can't say that. That's another thing. He's trademarked that phrase.
You know what's weird? I trademarked hello. So don't say it.
I don't believe you. The people over at Kraft Heinz, they make that cheese ketchup that people love so much.
I am shocked there isn't a cheese ketchup, because they have every flavor of ketchup in the world. Chipotle ketchup, honey mustard
Why
ketchup.
Why don't they make cheese ketchup?
Just called Chup.
Chup.
Is that really what you call it?
Chup with you, Chup.
Hey, Chup.
Karl Heinz. Oh, I'm sorry, Kraft Heinz. Karl Heinz Grunitza was a soccer star and needed to be mentioned. Kraft Heinz.
You get money for that too?
$5.
I do. Kraft Heinz plans to give all of its workers, that's everyone who's on the payroll at Kraft and Heinz, the day off after the Super Bowl or a big game, as we are required by law to say, a move that the food giant hopes will generate more publicity than buying a 30-second ad for millions of dollars. So they have the option, and in the past, they have bought time on the Super Bowl. But this year, they said, you know what? Instead of that, we're just going to give our workers a day off.
What are your thoughts on that? Because I think it's a really good idea.
I think it's a great idea.
Because they're going to save the money. I already know about Kraft and Heinz to begin with. Yeah, it'd be cute to see a little commercial from them, but sure, it's not going to sway my decision. I only use Heinz ketchup.
If you buy Kraft cheese or Heinz ketchup, I can't imagine what they could do in a 30-second ad that would sway you one way or the other. There's got to be some brand loyalty when it comes to cheese and ketchup, wouldn't you think?
Especially cheese and ketchup.
There would, right? Those would, yes, be at the top of the mountain with brand loyalty, I would imagine.
Sometimes I'll go Sargento if it's on sale. That way. No, I'm saying if it's cheaper than the Kraft, oh, but Kraft is a name I've come to trust as a mom, right, and a wife.
Wow. It's like an audition tape.
But can I tell you that they're probably giving their employees the day off because everyone who's making some kind of dip for Super Bowl, right, is going to use something from Kraft or Heinz anyway.
Right. So true. The idea here, it says, is to relieve workers from dragging themselves into the office on the Monday after the game, a day that's notorious for absenteeism. Is that true? While promoting the notion of a post-Super Bowl holiday, Kraft Heinz declined to say how much the gambit will cost, but involves giving a free vacation day to thousands of their employees. That's fantastic. I'm shocked more businesses, although the game usually ends
late,
around 7:30.
No.
Yeah. Does it end much later than that? Doesn't it end around 7:30 or 8 o'clock?
I thought it was a late one last year.
Yeah. What?
I was just going to ask if you know who's the halftime show, because I can't remember.
That would be Lady Gaga, who is also getting the day off after.
She's angling to get the day of off.
Right. Right. I remember when I was a kid, and I don't know if this is something that has stopped with our generation or not, but to me, a decent snack was, you know, in that when you open your refrigerator and the shelves are on the right-hand side, not the main compartment, but the side shelves.
The door?
We had, yeah, some people would call that the door, I guess.
And ours is on the left side. It depends. Oh. There's different ways your refrigerator opens, you know.
Oh, right.
Left.
Did you grow up in Europe?
No, it depends how your kitchen's set up. You
Isn't
have
your
to
freezer there on your left-hand side?
Isn't Bill, are you even being serious?
Refrigerator, freezer.
Well, we didn't have a side-by-side. Not everybody has the same.
Should be required by law. Everybody should have the same, so you know what I'm saying here.
When you bought it, wait, hang on. Freezer. If you bought a refrigerator, yeah, and it's just a one door, not the side-by-side.
Right.
You have to choose which way do you want the door to open, and it.
The left would be too disconcerting, and I'm ambidextrous. I can't imagine what you must have gone through.
It depends how your kitchen is set up. You don't pick it right-handed or left-handed.
So what was in the way? What was in the way?
Steve,
what was blocking?
Do you believe that this is real?
We're just dropping in on Bill driving Wendy insane.
What was blocking your door from opening to the right way it should be?
Our
refrigerator, God intended it to be.
If we open it to the left, yeah, because there is just a blank wall, to the right it would open and cover up a bunch of cabinets that are there.
I'd be okay with that. What did you have, gold in those cabinets?
Take a deep breath, Wendy. Deep breaths.
Did you have the Stone of Zanzibar? What were you hiding? You were obviously
hiding
something.
I'm not hiding anything. I want access to the cabinet.
In and out.
If that's what. All right.
How do you even get to work on your own every day?
Who says I do? Maybe I have a helper monkey who gets me in. All right. So as Wendy pointed out, the world being what it is, some people had the left opening door and some people had the right. We're proud Americans. We had the right opening door, but communists have the left. So
so the shelves on the door, sorry.
We had a
compartment
that slid. And
for
then,
butter?
Yeah, you could put
or
butter
vitamins.
In there or vitamins.
Or insulin in my dad's case.
Insulin, Bosco syrup, if you were so inclined. And we had a big stack of Kraft individual sliced cheeses. My mom would keep
it. You mean the singles?
Yeah, the singles. Some people call them the singles.
It's amazing you get.
So I would have as a snack, I would have three of those.
Three?
And a Grape Fanta. And that was a good, that was a decent snack. Yeah, three. Why is
this is not a slam.
Too many or too few?
Did you have them on crackers?
No.
Okay, because here's the thing, crackers. And Kraft singles have been around forever. I have made plenty of grilled cheeses with them. Yeah. I have put them on burgers, and nothing melts better.
Mm-hmm.
But when you just take it out of the cellophane and eat it by itself, it tastes much like the cellophane.
Oh, no, I didn't have that experience at all. Really? You know what I bet it was? Because your door was so screwed up, it probably messed with the magnetic field inside and made everything taste like cellophane. I don't remember any cellophane taste at all. I would have demanded a different kind of cheese.
It's a little disconcerting when you take a piece of cheese and you take the wrapper off of it and you can see the wrinkles that
Well,
that's kind of...
Because they don't even call it, it's not even legally cheese, right?
It's a processed cheese snack.
But it's called a cheese food. I think if you...
Don't even call it cheese?
No, on the box, it's a cheese food.
Cheese food.
I'm serious about that.
I think you're... I know it says processed...
Well, they don't want to say processed cheese, so they call it a cheese food.
Yeah.
Because they can't call it cheese.
Right. But that...
Wendy's going away now.
I don't think she's coming back. I
think this is the end.
Right.
We've seen the end.
Kraft Singles is a processed cheese product. Not even food.
But that doesn't even... That sounds...
I'm not disputing you, Little Miss Have to Be Right. I'm saying on the box...
Oh, pasteurized processed cheese food. That's what it says.
What does it say?
Pasteurized processed cheese food.
I heard you the first time. I just wanted to hear it again.
But for a company that makes cheese, why wouldn't it just be cheese? What's holding it back?
It's not really cheese.
Because this particular type of their cheese, they do have 100% natural cheese.
Does it cost a lot more?
It's just different.
Well, given the option between...
Do you live in this country? Do you ever go grocery shopping?
I currently do live in this country. But if you
do you ever live on your own?
What would that be like? Think about that for a minute.
Oh, that's a funny
That'd
thought,
be crazy. But if you're in the aisle and you have side by side pasteurized cheese food product and cheese, who would choose?
Well, because American cheese, I don't think is cheese. When I go to the deli, all I do is get Wisconsin American. You can get your Land O'Lakes or whatever.
Yeah.
I only get Wisconsin, and it still says pasteurized processed cheese food because, you know, American cheese has additives. If you get cheddar or Munster or Camembert, those would be more natural. This has things in it.
Well, now I'm not comfortable knowing I used to have three of those every day in a Grape Fanta. I'm surprised.
You're not worried about the Grape Fanta?
No, that's grape.
I think if it's wrapped individually in cellophane, it's not, that's a good
sign. It's not real.
But are you saying, I think there is an American cheese.
There'd have to be.
I don't think that there is a natural, like no.
Just flat out cheese. There'd have to be. How could there not be?
I don't know.
I buy, like, you can get Land O'Lakes American cheese. It's not, like, the
singles. That's processed. But that's still processed food, cheese food.
Do you have it with a Grape Fanta, Kevin? Do you ever have a Grape Fanta with it?
It's cheese. It's actual.
It doesn't come in a cellophane wrapper, but I don't think that American cheese, I think it's always processed. I could be wrong.
I can't imagine. There'd have to be.
I only
Kevin, try it. Seriously, try it with a Grape Fanta. You know what my phrase is? Make America grape again. That's what I'm saying.
I'm voting for you.
That's a fantastic
Do you like that? That's what I'm running on, Steve. We'll take a quick break and then more of this sort of behavior. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. I will admit that I'm wrong.
You are? About what?
About the Kraft Singles versus American cheese.
Is that all?
Yeah, everything else you were right about.
According to mentalfloss.com, American cheese, the kind you get in the individual plastic wrappers, is processed cheese or, quote, as Steve said, cheese food.
Right.
Meaning it's not actually real cheese. The next time you're at the grocery store, take a look at the package singles and notice how many don't actually have cheese in their name.
Wow.
I've noticed that with ice cream lately, too. There's like ice cream...
Well, I was going to
bring or something.
This is what I was going to bring up. I love Dairy Queen. I'm crazy about Dairy Queen. Dairy Queen does not have ice cream. And I know that's impossible to fathom. You say, "Well, yes they do. They're America's number one seller of ice cream. How can you say they don't have ice cream?"
But if you look at everything when you go to Dairy Queen, it doesn't say the words ice cream anywhere at Dairy Queen. It says frozen dairy treat everywhere because it falls under the bracket of ice milk, not ice cream. And even some of your favorites, like you said, if you go to Jewel or Mariano's and look down the ice cream aisle, so many of them avoid the words ice cream because it's inaccurate. It's frozen dairy product or ice milk.
I never thought Dairy Queen gave you ice cream. I thought it was like soft serve.
Well, but soft serve, it can also qualify as ice cream, but it's the amount of...
cream?
It is the amount of cream that they put in the ice cream.
We're good at this, aren't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, we're scientists.
All right, so most of the processed... Most of the individually wrapped ones don't even have cheese in the name. Kraft Singles, for example, are made with milk, whey, milk protein concentrate.
No way.
Milk fat, less than 2% of calcium phosphate, salt, sodium citrate, blah, 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 blah. In short, Kraft Singles are made with less than 51% actual cheese, so it can't legally be called cheese. So it's called cheese food, which Steve pointed out.
But think about this subliminally. We just assume... It's the color of cheese. It tastes like cheese. It smells like cheese. It's got to be cheese, but legally it's not.
Right, but when I'm sorry, I don't think it said cheese food when we were little.
I don't think it did either. And I think they were forced by, you know,
well, because then they found out.
Yeah.
And not all American cheeses are made equal. Classically, before the factory processed stuff hit the market, American cheese was a blend, often of cheddar and Colby, made for easy melting and approachable flavor. The cheese you find at the deli counters is usually made from real cheese. It may not be holy cheese.
Holy cheese, no, Batman.
Like fully, I guess I should say, W-H-O. Oh. Well, so check the label for the words pasteurized processed cheese. These deli cheeses still have fewer chemicals and extracts than the individually packaged stuff, so they'll usually taste fresher and more flavorful.
Oh.
Though American cheese describes that familiar sandwich staple, it does not encompass everything that is truly American and cheese. When it comes to cheeses made here in the USA, there's more than what comes in blocks and singles.
Well, we just learned that the hard way, didn't we?
Well, no, I knew that the Kraft singles weren't real cheese.
Right.
Like the... aerosol cheese is the same kind of thing.
Right.
That's like your soft serve of cheese. You
it's
can swirl it.
And deodorant at the same time.
My son loves that spray can cheese.
It's really good.
Oh, so I went
is
to,
it? Do you really like it? Seriously?
Yeah, I like it on celery.
Yeah.
I went to a grocery store and asked for it, and they said, you know, that's we don't sell it. That's not really food. they like had to take a stand against it. Yeah, we don't
it's
sell
a cheese
that.
Food, though, technically. It's the same thing as a Kraft single.
Right, with a little aerosol mixture or whatever.
It's kind of fun.
I promise you, and I could look this up, I guarantee you a man invented that. I promise you. There's no way
I'm
in the
sure.
woman. Because that's the kind of thing a guy just sits and dreams about. What if cheese came in an aerosol can?
Okay, but you said you came home from school every day and you had three Kraft singles and a grape soda.
And that was a snack. Like now, I think, for various reasons, I don't. Is that still a snack for kids? Would they just have three... little pieces of cheese and a soda pie like that somebody would stop that from happening at this point, wouldn't they?
It's not that bad.
It's not.
I wouldn't give them the Kraft singles. I'd say have some Munster.
Yeah, live it up.
But I loved the aerosol cheese because when we had like a little clubhouse and we would bring the aerosol cheese and some crackers and then you didn't need a knife or anything.
Yeah,
and it was fun.
I guess so.
It was a great clubhouse cheese with a club cracker. That's how it all came to be.
I'm shocked they didn't market it that way.
They should have.
Because a lot of people had clubhouses then.
It was fun.
Strange. Yeah.
Me and all the guys in the neighborhood.
Well, the point of all this is this. If you work at Kraft Heinz or if you're Karl Heinz Granitza, you get the day after the Super Bowl off. You're free to do whatever you want. Enjoy cheese products all day long and ketchup.
Cheese food.
Right. Enjoy. Do me a favor. Go the next time you're at the grocery store, just say to somebody working there, which aisle is the cheese food in? Just to see how they react to that. I need cheese food. Where's cheese food?
And being Catholic, Bill,
yeah.
I think once a month during Lent, we would have the stupid tuna casserole with the elbow macaroni and the peas and celery and cream of mushroom soup. And my mom, as well as everyone else's mom, because that's what the recipe called for, you would take like 8 Kraft singles and put the squares on top of lasagna pan filled with tuna casserole, and it would melt and stay in that square form.
For weeks.
It really did.
It was a very disciplined cheese food.
It was. It didn't. It melted, but not free form. It stayed in that square.
It's a miracle.
It didn't really melt. It just relaxed.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Because leave one on the counter, it's not going to melt.
No. All right, a break and then more show. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. All right, it's Bill, it's Wendy. And 50 years ago today, 23 inches of snow fell in Chicago, making it the largest single snowfall in Chicago history.
The snowstorm of 67.
The blizzard.
The blizzard of 67.
And people didn't have to worry about driving in it because they couldn't. They just pulled over, parked their car all on the expressways everywhere. Nobody could drive. But hopefully we're not going to get that blizzard. I do know we're getting some snow, and we're going to talk some winter driving and other things with John Tunnel, who's with us. He's been an Allstate agency owner for over 10 years. John, how are you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Remember the blizzard of 67?
You're too young, aren't you? You don't remember it?
I don't remember it real well. I wasn't here yet, but a few years later, I was in the 70s for those blizzards. So
we lived on in an apartment. My family and I lived on the second floor of an apartment, and the snow was so high that when we looked out our windows in the second floor, we looked like we were on the first floor. The snow came right up to the windows on the second floor.
Wow.
It was huge.
And we were, 4 years old at the time?
Yeah.
So it really was like these mammoth hills that were all over the place. I wasn't scared as a kid.
No, it was great.
It was, you could finally do sledding in your own yard.
Right. Right.
Because there was actually a hill.
John, thanks for coming by. This was fun.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome.
All right. So winter driving, we always say this. I actually notice more problems when it's raining. Like, what happens to people where they forget how to drive?
I think they get distracted a little bit with those devices that they have called telephones. I think that they're using Facebook and probably texting your show at 24720.
Maybe.
Asking questions.
It's possible. But you've noticed this. I'm sure that that's become, and it's so disturbing. Mm-hmm. It's dangerous. People are doing it. It's illegal. It's dangerous.
And they're not getting pulled over for it.
No.
No, unfortunately, they're not. And distracted driving does lead, when we have severe weather with snow, rain, sleet, whatever, it's important to pay attention. But unfortunately, at those times, it seems for whatever reason they continue to check social media and whatnot.
I have not seen figures on whether or not there are more accidents in the age of texting and using your cell phone while you're driving. But you guys must have access to those numbers. Aren't more people getting into fender benders or worse because they're doing things other than just focusing on the road?
Unfortunately, the claims have been going up. We keep data, and we can take a look at with precipitation or without, so snow, sleet. And what they're finding is that in Illinois specifically, during that time, we are actually ranked about 131 out of 200 of the safest cities. So we're not doing so hot.
No, that's terrible.
Oh, my God. So the top 200 safest driving cities right here in America, and what number are we?
131st.
Terrible.
It looks like as far as like Chicagoland itself, the likelihood for a collision goes up about 18% above the national average. So usually
it goes up when the weather's bad or when people are distracted and driving.
A combination of both, but specifically when the weather is worse. So the participation goes up, and we find that the safest drivers out there are in Brownsville, Texas, where they're not having snow like today here.
That's where we should drive from. I'm going to move to Brownsville, Texas and drive in every
commute.
Day.
Don't know a whole lot about it, but it sounds like they have a lot of safe drivers there.
Boy, they must, to be number one in the country. And then you got to tell us what the worst is. What would the worst be?
New York.
Is it really? Is it New York City? Are they the worst?
I assume. Unfortunately, I don't have that stat.
Oh.
I just looked at the safest.
All right. Well, they're
going
to sue you now, John. You have a good attorney.
Allstate agent and owner John Tunnel in the studio. I have a question that maybe you know the answer to, maybe you don't. I have a son who's 17 now, still doesn't have his license. I know Bill and I talked about this. When I was 16, I went on my birthday to get my license. I couldn't wait. And I'm noticing that kids are not in a big hurry to drive anymore. Why is that?
That's a great question. My grandmother never drove herself. Like, she was 80 years old before she actually tried to drive, and she got so scared that she didn't. But I think
was like that back then. A lot of women didn't really drive. They didn't need to.
Sure. But I think that the kids these days, I don't know what it is. The cost of having an extra car in the household probably is a little tougher out there for people.
But I'm dying for him to get his license so he can help with some of the errands. I know your insurance rate definitely goes up, especially sure. for a teenage boy.
Yeah, the distractions are out there. Hopefully he's a good driver. I'm sure that you've set a good example for him. But
he shouldn't really drive with me. That's probably, he should drive with his dad.
Your grandmother decided at 80 that it was time to start driving?
Time to test drive out the Impala. So luckily it wasn't in a snowstorm, but God rest her soul. She's no longer around. But
how about
she,
that?
But it's scary driving now. And I was just going to also say that, and Bill, you've noticed this too, the kids are better about texting and driving than we
than the
are.
The parents are.
There's a lot of pledges out there. We have where we pledge not to text and drive. And a lot of the high school students in the local communities have signed up for that. I think it's important for the parents to even sit down with their kids. And if their kids are doing that, maybe it's time for us to, as parents, to set that example too. And, you know, just make a commitment, you know, Facebook or whatever it is, it can wait for a few minutes. Let's get there safe.
Is there such a thing as a mechanism that would disable a phone from having text abilities while the person's driving? I'd be all for that.
Yeah, I know a lot of carriers do have that app. Yeah. AT&T offers one. But absolutely, I think the key is maybe just to turn it off, put it in your trunk so you don't have the temptation.
That's a good idea.
I can't do that.
Well, because you got the bodies in your trunk. There's no room for anything else. It's jam-packed in there.
You're very funny. All right, so Allstate agent and owner John Tunnell in the studio. Where are your, you have two locations here in Chicago. Where are they located?
We're in Albany Park area and Edgebrook. So, but we are licensed statewide in Indiana and Wisconsin, just a small plug there. So.
Perfect.
Talk about driving safely. How can we make our homes a little safer?
Sure. I think this time of the year when the weather is the way it is, you know, it's good to take a look at the gutters, make sure that they're, you know, clear at this point, make sure that the ice damming doesn't happen when the ice comes back. Get the furnace checked out, get the dryer vents checked out. Just we want to make sure that, you know, house fires, unfortunately, can happen. Also, the pipes can freeze, so you want to make sure to keep the temperature about 65 degrees if you're gone. Sometimes we turn it down because the cost goes up on the gas, but it's good to monitor that.
You want
to
leave a little water dripping through if you're going away for any length of time, right?
Absolutely, and keep the cabinet doors open.
Okay. Oh, what does that do?
It lets the heat circulate.
Around the pipes?
Oh, I wouldn't have thought of that. All right.
The cabinet, like, under the sink, correct?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Not your kitchen cabinets. That won't make any difference.
And not your front door, because people would rob you.
Oh, that might not be the greatest idea.
Right. It's good advice.
All right. Let's just take a quick phone call from Steve, because I was really curious as to why kids... Wasn't one of your daughters not in a hurry to drive? Is she driving yet?
Reese still isn't. No, Kylie, as soon as she turned 16, got her license, and Reese just wasn't interested.
And she's 20.
We're not pressuring her, yeah.
And Steve, how old were you when you got your license?
I didn't get my license until I was 18 because our family only had one vehicle, and I knew that the only time I would be able to drive it was to, in fact, run errands for my mom.
Ah.
Maybe that's why he's not getting
it. That's it. Huh. That's very smart.
All right. Very interesting. Well, thank you, Steve. You a good driver now?
Oh, yeah.
Any accidents recently? Oh,
I think you just got in one. I know.
You just got in
one. Don't you get a discount if you're accident-free?
Absolutely. We do have, you know, the way that rates are based, safe drivers also come into a company, you know, with a better rate.
Right.
Just based on their driving history.
And talk about this, John, because people always say, well, how is this fair? But it's less expensive to insure a girl driver at the age of 16 and in that age bracket than it is a boy, because more boys get into accidents at that age, right?
Unfortunately... when I first got my driver's license, I was 16. I had two car accidents. One the first day I had my license, one a week later in my parents'. I totaled their car.
Attaboy.
And then their second car. So that wasn't as bad, but the statistics just support it. You know, you got to figure the amount of, you know, the size of a car. And sometimes, not to say that 16-year-old boy wouldn't, you know, think sometimes, but
right,
you know, you can get distracted a lot easier at that age, and just you're not as, you know, I had an accident on ice, so I
wasn't all your fault.
Yeah, it was the first time I drove on ice. I had no experience at it, so you know, just being able to have experience driving, I think that helps out. You know, I know a lot of kids these days, they're driving more with their parents, which helps out. But, you know, when I got that driver's license, I thought, I'll just take my friend to school. And
and then the accident.
It wasn't a good situation. I wasn't prepared.
So. All right, but see, that's a guy I can top you because I got, my sister took me out driving with just my permit, and I got in an accident.
Oh, dear.
And thankfully, it was just a fender bender. It was an uncontrolled four-way stop, no stop signs. And I, you know, my sister's coaching me. You pull up to the intersection, you slow down, make sure no one's there. And I slowed down, and no one was coming. I got in the intersection, and just then, someone from the right, which technically they'd have the right-of-way, came flying through the intersection and hit the right front end of the car. And I will never forget this because it's like, I'm going to get arrested. I have my permit. It's only a permit. And she's like, that's okay. I'm an adult. I'm with you. And this is before cell phones, so she made me go to some lady's house and ask if they'd call the police. I said, why don't you do it? She said, you have to learn these things, Wendy.
Yeah,
but it was really a good experience.
Good advice.
Wow. But that's your girl guy thing, so it's just statistics can be wrong.
I didn't know what to do, so I just cried.
I think
you're
you chose
so
the right
cute.
One. Just a quick note to the listeners, if you order an Uber and either John and Wendy come to your house to pick you up, you may want to reconsider.
Well, thank you so much for coming up. John Tunnell, you've been an Allstate agency owner for the past 10 years and in the Albany Park area.
In Edgebrook.
And if people need to contact you, you can give your addresses, phone numbers, whatever you want to do.
773-279-8600.
Give it one more time.
773-279-8600.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
Thank you very much.
A quick break and then more show ahead. Bill and Wendy, WGN. You know what I can't remember? The blizzard of 67, the anniversary is now, all right? So I don't remember because you and I were just little kids at the time. Did all this snow fall over a period of one day, or was it a couple of days all together? I can't remember.
It was
that.
A continuous, at 5:02, it began to snow, nothing remarkable. It was January in Chicago, and besides 4 inches of snow had been predicted. 4 inches of snow had been predicted. This is in 1967. But it kept snowing all through Thursday and into early Friday morning. So Thursday, 5:02 a.m. into Friday morning. So in about a 24-hour period, it stopped at 10:10 a.m., so a little over 24 hours. By the end, 23 inches of snow covered Chicago and suburbs, the largest single snowfall in the city's history.
Wow.
Thousands were stranded in offices and schools and buses. If you go, I'm at ChicagoTribune.com, oddly enough, right now, and if you go look at the pictures, I mean, people just made an attempt to get in their car outside of their office to get home, and it's like, I can't even move. Just forget it. They left their car. Don't you remember the pictures of cars just facing every which way?
I remember.
Was, like, no rhyme or reason to it.
Here's a memory I have of it. My grandfather, this would be my mom's father, drove and parked his car. The snow got such that traffic wasn't moving. So he parked his car maybe a mile and a half from where we lived. We dug it out a couple of weeks later, 2 or 3 weeks later. He never drove again. That was the end. He said, I don't want to ever drive in a situation like that again. So he just never drove after that. But I remember my dad and I was too young to really help them get the car out. But 2 or 3 weeks later after the snow, the big blizzard.
Long?
Yeah, it was just in a block of snow. It was just totally engulfed.
Thousands were stranded in offices and schools and buses, about 50,000, that's 50,000 abandoned cars, and 800 Chicago Transit Authority buses littered the streets and expressways. All most people wanted to do was get home.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the worst, even when you have like a slight blizzards, where even just when it begins snowing, all you can think about on that ride home is getting home.
Right. Right.
This was something. One woman worked downtown, lived on the city's north side, normally a 35-minute commute. She spent 4 hours making the trip. So from 35 minutes to 4 hours. I can't believe she got home.
Well, it's almost reminiscent of the situation we had on Lakeshore Drive a couple of years ago where
people just abandoned their cars.
You couldn't get out. Yeah.
In South Suburban Markham, 650 students in 4 schools camped out in libraries and gymnasiums because school buses couldn't get through.
Mm.
Got to tell you, that might have been fun.
Yeah, I imagine there was some fun involved, I guess.
I mean, for one night.
Yeah, for one night you can endure it, yeah.
They're all enjoying themselves, according to Superintendent J. Lewis Weingartner. That's what he told the Tribune. This is the night that will go down in many memory books.
Mm-hmm.
I bet it did.
Yeah, it's, you know, because we were kids and I think we weren't accustomed to how much snowfall was possible or probable.
4 inches was predicted.
Right, and it got 23 inches. So this was the pre-skilling weather era.
Oh, he never would have messed that up.
Never. He would have been the one guy who said, we're going to get 23 inches, and it would have snowed 23 right. inches.
Again, ChicagoTribune.com is where you can find this. Some memories weren't as cheerful. Looting was rampant.
Snow looting is the worst kind of looting.
That's terrible.
People only stole salt. And small scrapers.
I do remember. I don't remember a lot of it. I don't even know that I remember playing in it. I remember looking out and seeing in it.
Yeah.
4 years old, I don't really have a big recollection, but for some reason, I remember the long lines at the grocery stores, maybe just hearing my mom talk about it years later.
Yeah.
Because now, if there's like 2 inches predicted, everybody right. goes to get bread and milk and beer and frozen pizzas.
It's the end of the world.
But was that one surpassed by the 79 storm or not? Because
for no, me, 67 was a bigger snow,
really?
Steve. Yeah.
Wow.
And 79 was the next blizzard. I will look that up as well. That was 29 inches, but yeah. I guess it was a longer...
Over a longer period of time.
Yeah, because during January 1918, 42 inches of snow descended on the city. 20.3 inches fell in mid-January 1979, but that was piled on top of snow that had already been on the ground,
yeah.
producing a record accumulation of 29 inches.
I remember the snowdrifts then, where cause I was in a rural town, that across their neighbor across the street, the snowdrift literally started at their gutter.
Wow.
And came down.
Wow.
The snow plows on my street would, they would back up and rev up to hit the snow to try to clear it. The drifts were so big.
Paralyzing strength of the 67 blizzard suspended normal routines for days. The latticework of stranded cars, trucks, and buses plugged roads. Thousands of air travelers and workers were stranded at Chicago's three airports because Migs Field was still around then, which were closed for record-long stretches. Drifts 10 feet high covered Midway Airport runways.
Wow. Think about that. That's what I swear to you, out of my bedroom window, because we were on the second floor, to just see the snow came up to the window and we were on the second floor. So I don't know. I mean, downstairs, they just must not have been able to see anything but snow. But it looked like we were all of a sudden down a level on the first floor.
That would be very weird.
Well, as a kid, you want to play in it then. You want to get a sled and just play in it. There was a lady in our apartment complex who stood that, I'll never forget, all day. And anytime anyone went up or down the stairs, she sat on a lawn chair in the winter. It's January. And she warned people how treacherous the snow. Be careful on the stairs. It's so dangerous. And she would just do that thing where she would just distribute salt up and down the stairs. She spent the whole day there doing that.
That would be me if I was an old lady during that time. That
right.
really would have been.
Right.
We'll take a break. And then if people want to share their memories, because really this was the most snowfall that Chicago ever got in one storm. The blizzard of 1967 is 50 years old, Bill.
Happy birthday, blizzard of 67. We'll take your calls and texts. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Snow, snow.
Snow,
snow,
snow. Snow. It won't be long before we'll all be there with snow.
Before we're buried in the snow.
Right.
Not now.
It was a blizzard.
50 years ago today.
Yeah, happy anniversary, snowstorm of 67.
Blizzard, I'm afraid
that's fear-mongering, and I'm afraid to do that. 23 inches, or as Donald Trump would say, over 150 inches of snow, all within a 24-hour period,
fell
on our city. It was the biggest snowstorm of all time.
It was the biggest gathering of snowflakes I have ever seen in
right.
one place.
That's correct.
We need to talk to Marty. We're reminiscing about 50 years ago today, the blizzard of 1967. Marty, talk to us.
Hey, guys. I was just, you know, back in 67, I was actually pretty young, but old enough to still remember all this drifts and all that stuff. But the one thing that always stuck in my mind is that John Coleman was the only weather forecaster that actually predicted a snowstorm. Everybody else was like 2-3 inches or so, but John Coleman knew that it was going to be a big one. I was kind of hoping we'd get Tom Skilling on the line just for his comments on that to see how John was able to do that 50 years ago, because I'm sure the technology is totally different.
Now, John Coleman, Wendy, you know this. He wasn't here yet,
right? Because we doubted you. I will be honest with you, Marty. Bill doubted you. Yeah. So I did some research, and according to the research I found, John Coleman was actually doing weather on Milwaukee TV at the time and predicted the 23 inches. I don't know exactly, but he was closer than anyone else. And according to John Coleman's own account, Channel 7 hired him immediately after that storm, and then he went on to be the co-founder of the Weather Channel.
So you're saying that John Coleman got a job because of snow and Michael Belandic lost because of snow.
That's what we're saying.
How about that? So it's possible you may have seen John Coleman. Were you living north of the city? Because there's some areas, if you go north of Chicago, where you get Milwaukee stations as well. Were you maybe seeing him that way?
No, we were Southsiders. So, back then, you got your 257 and a fuzzy Channel 11.
Right. And 32, which looked like it was in a snowstorm all the time.
Yeah.
44 was worse.
And, Bill Jackson and the Giggle Snort Hotel.
Right. Right. You always had that little snowy effect on those channels, on the UHF. Yeah. Well, thanks for remembering it with us, Marty. Appreciate it.
You bet, you guys. Take care.
Thank you. Vera wants to chime in as well. Vera, you remember the blizzard of 67?
Very well. I was in high school. I was a freshman. And my sister, I'm the baby of the family, so my sister lived across the street from the school. And I always stopped there after school. Well, my parents had a deli / grocery store and tavern. And they had called my sister and said, don't let Vera go home because we may not make it home. Sure enough, they spent from that Thursday, I didn't see them again until Monday night when they came home.
But look, they had deli, they had bread, they had beer.
Not only did they have it, but they cleared the shelves. People could walk places, but they couldn't drive. So everybody in the neighborhood, first all the milk and bread cleared out, then all the powdered milk, the canned milk, then people were buying ice cream for their coffee. I mean, my dad had to restock the entire grocery store after that.
So it ended up being good for business. I mean,
it was great.
Yeah, I can imagine. Wow, that's hysterical.
Well, and ironically, they were right across the street from a Kroger store, and the employees couldn't make it into Kroger. So nobody was in competition with them. So they really, they literally just spent the whole weekend. They had a couch in the back of the store. It was like a kitchen, and my mom would, bake the hams and stuff back there. And it was just phenomenal that they were there all that weekend.
Oh, that's great. Well, Vera, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Sure. Have a good weekend.
You too.
See, so that's not such a terrible memory of it.
No. Do you have pictures of it? Did your mom take pictures of you guys in the snow that year?
I think somewhere in some album, yeah. It was us standing next to the big snow drifts.
Yeah.
I got to look for those. Ezra has a very interesting story about the blizzard of 1967. Talk to us, Ezra.
Hi. Love your show. Listen to you always.
Thank you, Ezra.
When I can.
Thank you.
And today is my brother's 50th birthday.
Happy birthday. What's his name?
Better than Ezra.
Actually, my name is not Ezra.
Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's a different story I could tell you, but it'll take too long. And I was, we were just like new. We came to America in 1964 in September.
Yeah.
And my brother was born. I didn't speak English, but I saw my dad leave, and I'm like, wow, this is really dark and a lot of snow. And then my mom screaming to go get my aunt who lived downstairs in another apartment. And she was like screaming so loud, I thought she was going to kill me. I'm like, why is she so mad? I didn't do anything. And turns out that she was about to give birth to my brother in the apartment.
Oh, no.
We were there, and my dad went out to get somebody to come and help, like an ambulance. The only people I know came as policemen, and they go, do you have any scissors? I'm going, why? I'm not allowed to touch them. They're kind of...
Oh.
And I'm going, what are you going to do with scissors? I was so confused.
Can I just say, thank God your brother wasn't like you weren't en route to the hospital at the time.
That
I mean, thankfully,
worse.
A nice warm house.
And the worst of it all is my mom had to clean that rug afterwards.
Thank you, not your real name, Ezra. Have a great day. That's an interesting story.
Yeah.
I got to tell you that. Steve wants to reminisce about the blizzard of 67. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Steve. I'm sorry, Wendy. Yeah, I was a paper carrier in 1967.
Yeah.
And only four of us got to do, were able to complete our routes. And I usually made between $13 and $14 a week. I got $81 in tips.
That's tremendous. So you were hoping for blizzards every weekend after that.
Absolutely. But it happened again.
Well, thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
It's a pleasure to talk to you, too. Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Thank you.
So $81 in 1967 money is like making $300 or $400. That's a pretty good day. Yeah.
And that was just from bringing the newspaper from the bottom of the driveway up to the door.
I know. That's great. All right. More of your thoughts today, the 50th anniversary of the Blizzard of 67. What do you remember? We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. Since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
It was 50 years ago today here in the city of Chicago that you couldn't get anywhere you wanted to go because the Blizzard of 67 was upon us.
And 23 inches of snow fell, and it was the worst snowstorm in Chicago history. It started at 5 a.m. and went a little over 24 hours, yeah. But 23 inches continually. And Rich was trapped somewhere. Hi, Rich.
Hey, guys. Yeah. I was trapped at the Catholic school in Homewood called St. Joseph's School, and I was 9 years old, and we had to stay at school till 8 o'clock at night till our parents came up with a sled to take me and my younger brother home. But it was fun. We played dodgeball with the nuns. They fed us all kinds of food.
See, that's what I was thinking, that it wouldn't be bad for, even if it was overnight for one night, it's something different. It's with, you know, a bunch of your friends. I thought it would be kind of cool.
Yeah, it was. It wasn't too bad. And then they pulled us home, and the next day I went. That was back when Jewel used to be in the uptowns, you know, in downtowns of towns.
Yeah.
Went with my dad to Jewel, stopped at the bar on the way to get a hot dog and a beer for him. And then got to Jewel, and they were all out of bread and milk, I remember. So
that seems to be the thing, that if people fear that they're not going to have access to food, those are the first few things that they get. Bread and milk.
But now
I
look
would like
at-
to put a shout out, if I could, to the 45th reunion of my classmates in 1972, St. Joseph's.
Are you going to make it a sleepover in the gym?
Which is, well, they're closing down. After
oh, no.
Yeah, so.
Their sports team.
I live in Seattle now, so.
Their sports team, of course, Wendy, the Fightin' Aspirin of St. Joseph's.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm going to try to fly in for that.
That's happy reunion.
Yeah, well, I live in Seattle now, but, you know, listen to you guys all the time.
Thank you.
Thank
we
you
love
so
that.
Much.
Thanks, Rich.
All right.
Have a good
Have
weekend.
A good
all right.
See, I think that would be fun, but I'll tell you, since the blizzard of 67, now when there is snow forecast, go to your local Jewel or Mariano's. I mean, the shelves are bare like that night
right.
for sure.
Sure.
Because none of us want to be caught without bread and milk.
The staples.
And eggs. And I'd go beer, too.
Yeah.
Just to have it on hand. Jerry had a fun time during the blizzard of 1967. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. We were sliding off our roof onto the ground, and we could do that because there was so much snow on the ground. And you didn't need a sled. You just sat on your behind and slid right off the edge over the gutter. Back to the ground.
Jerry, was your mom aware of this? Because moms have a way of ruining the fun when it comes to a dangerous game like that. Was your mom aware you were doing this?
My mom pushed me out the window to do it.
All right, what have I learned in the last couple of phone calls? Nuns play dodgeball,
yeah.
And Jerry's mom slid off the roof with him.
Yeah, all bets are off during a blizzard.
Another interesting anecdote was, we had a driveway and I shoveled it. The snow was so high at the corners and at the edge of the driveways. Do you remember in the old days, aerials on the cars were made of metal and you could raise them up?
Yeah.
You were, it was recommended, and everybody did this, you'd raise the aerial as high as you could and put like a red flag up there, because when you came to the corner, nobody could see the car because the snow was so high.
I remember that.
And at the edge of the driveway, backing out, nobody could see you, and you couldn't see the cars coming in the street. So this red flag was an alert. It was an alert. And I walked about four blocks to the local grocery store to get groceries. The funny thing, ironic, is 2 years ago on Super Bowl Sunday, we had about 20 inches of snow.
Right.
But why weren't we affected so negatively on Super Bowl Sunday 2 years ago as we were in 67? I cannot figure it out.
Because they were able to predict it a little more and be on top of it. Yeah, this was, you know, before they, I guess the prediction, what did we say, was supposed to be 4 inches, Jerry, and it was 23.
Uh-huh.
So the key is advance warning.
But it was still 20 inches
sure.
of snow 2 years ago, and we didn't have all those anecdotes and stories about 1967. I don't understand it.
Well, thanks for sharing those memories. I remember that, having to put something on top of your antenna, and if it wasn't a red flag, you know, those styrofoam balls were very popular.
I've seen that. I remember those,
and
yeah.
we never had one on our car, but I seem to remember putting one on, not myself, but my dad did.
So they would sell those, or did you have to craft them yourself? How did people have access to those?
Didn't you just take a red rag? Oh, Jerry's gone. But you would just find something so you could see a car approaching, like a submarine,
right.
you know, what
right.
What is it called? You know, a periscope.
Yeah.
It would. Yeah. You'd have this car going in these like little valleys of the snow, so yeah. you couldn't see a car when you come to an intersection because the snow was piled up so high. So all of a sudden you'd see this little.
That made it visible.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
I sort of remember that on my dad's old Rambler for some reason. The weird things we remember.
That's excellent. All right. So, again, happy anniversary to everybody who survived the blizzard of 1967. It's
and
the
look,
50th
it's starting
anniversary.
To snow right now.
Here it
How
comes.
Weird is that? We've done this,
Here
Bill.
It comes. All right. Roe and Anna will be in just a minute. We'll find out what they have coming up on their show. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.